1 minute. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 12th, 2011 Morro Bay City Council meeting. I'm glad you're all here. I tried to shake everybody's hand, but if I missed anybody who came in late, sorry about that. We're glad that everybody came out tonight. Let the record reflect that all members of the City Council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Ms. Christine Johnson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Announcements, Carla?
Well, I forgot my calendar, so just wanted a reminder that this weekend, Saturday, is the Antique Emergency Apparatus Car Show.
Yeah, I hope everybody comes out for that. It's the first one. It should be a lot of fun. Nancy?
The county committee, where I represent our mayor, celebrating the centennial of the women's right to vote in California, is moving right along, and Morro Bay suffragettes will be marching in our...
The negotiations was lease terms and conditions. No action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. Our chamber speakers tonight, we're going to ask Ms. Christine Johnson to go first. She's president of the Morro Bay Friends of the Library, and she's going to be followed by our librarian, Jackie Kinsey. And then Adrienne Harris, National Estuary Program, will be third, and then we'll open it up to everybody else. Good evening, Ms. Johnson, and welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, and City Council members. My name is Christine Johnson, and I'm the president of the Morro Bay Friends of the Library. You may have seen in the Tribune this week Judy Salamanca's By the Bay column announcing that it is National Library Week, and our thanks to Judy for highlighting all of our Estero Bay libraries. So what do the Friends of the Library do? The Friends provide financial support and advocacy for your Morro Bay Library. Over $25,000 in direct support last year. Big news in the library world. The book sale is moving to the Morro Bay Community Center across the street from the library for our next sale on Saturday, May 14th from 9 until 2. So please make a note of that change in venue. Moving the sale, what does it mean? It means more room to browse, more books to buy, more money raised for your Morro Bay Library. With those funds, your Morro Bay Library will purchase more books, more e-books, more magazines, more DVDs, and more children's materials. Special thanks to Joe Woods, Recreation and Parks Director, City of Morro Bay, for his support in our move. The Friends of your Morro Bay Library are nearly 400 members strong, and I suspect there are a few Friends members here. Oh, I have more new friends to make. Okay, thank you. So if you come by the library, I'd be happy to sign you up for Friends membership. And when you sign up, you'll be invited to our newest members-only event, and it's been graciously sponsored by Chris and Vicki Battles, the owners of Morro Bay Wine Cellar. The event is Friday, May 13, and if you're not a member, you can join at the door. Finally, I have a pleasure this evening to introduce to you Morro Bay's new library branch manager, Jackie Kinsey. Jackie comes to Morro Bay from Maryland with a master's degree in library science and many, many years of diverse library experience. So I know when you see Jackie, you'll welcome her warmly to Morro Bay. And I do appreciate your time this evening. Jackie will be up next sharing more information about your Morro Bay Library. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Christine. And thank you, everyone, for this time to speak with you about your Morro Bay Library. My name is Jackie Kinsey. I was appointed the branch manager of the library in September of 2010. It's been a great pleasure getting to know the staff and the community of Morro Bay to host wonderful free programs such as the Adult Winter Reading Program, the Children's Summer Reading Program, and our very popular book discussion group, and to begin to make future plans for our library. This week, as Christine stated, is National Library Week. Can I see a show of hands of how many people have a public library card? Oh, wonderful, wonderful. If not, it's painless. Let me assure you, come by and get one. Being National Library Week, I want to emphasize that when our economy is down, the library use is up. And this is significantly supported by statistics that we keep. For example, in fiscal year 06-07, total circulation, which is the number of materials checked out, was about 177,000. Fiscal year 07-08, circulation was 193,000. Fiscal year 08-09, it grew to 234,000. And just this past year, 09-10, it was up to 245,000 of items circulated just at the Morro Bay Branch Library in that year. Another statistic is just in the month of December at your Morro Bay Library, 21,000 items were checked out in our library. And that is just a wonderful number to brag about. And we can do better, too. During this week in the library, we will be collecting food for fines. So if you happen to have a few fines of overdue fines or hold fees that you have, bring in a can of non-perishable food, and that will stand for $1 off of your overdue fines. This is a great incentive to come into the library, clear your record, and support your community, too. All the food goes to the food bank. Recently in the San Luis Library System, we began a more visible volunteer recruitment. At Morro Bay Library, we are very fortunate to have such an active and involved friends group and volunteer staff. But donations of your time, talent, and money will always be appreciated and needed. For example, at this time, we could use some technical expertise to assist customers with the popular e-books that are being downloaded now, setting up for programs and moving these.
Just a reminder, it's the protocol here that we don't applaud. Not that these ladies are certainly deserving of it, and the next one is deserving of it. And I know that there's some emotional stuff coming up, and you're going to want to cheer on. We ask that you don't do that, because applause then invites boos, and before you know it, the whole meeting degrades. So if you would do that for us, we would be very grateful. Ms. Harris. Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council, the audience here and at home. My name is Adrienne Harris, and I'm the new director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. The Estuary Program is a non-regulatory nonprofit focused on protecting and restoring Morro Bay and its watershed. The Morro Bay Estuary was designated as a nationally significant estuary in 1995. Our organization, along with 28 others around the country, make up the National Estuary Program. Our projects stem from a management plan, which was drafted by the community and local experts and first implemented in 2000. The management plan outlines the ecological resources of the estuary and watershed, prioritizes the problems facing the estuary, and lays out actions to preserve and restore its resources. Our management plan guides our program's priorities, including our community grants program. We are embarking on an update of our management plan. Our update efforts will center on identifying any new issues facing the estuary and watershed and updating any actions that are out of date. The first public meeting regarding the update will be held this Thursday, April 14th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Morro Bay Community Center's multipurpose room, and the address for that is 1001 Kennedy Way, Morro Bay. The meeting time and locations have been announced on a number of community boards and the local paper and other venues. I'm aware that that is also at the same time as the GPA meeting, and we apologize for that, that is at the same time. We invite everyone to attend and lend us your expertise if you can't attend. We'd still love for you to participate in our process. You can go to our website, which is www.mbnep.org. That's the acronym for Morro Bay National Estuary Program.org. And click on the link regarding the public meeting. You can sign up for our email list there so you can get updates on the process for the management plan, and we will send you information on future public meetings that we'll have on it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adrian. Thanks for coming tonight. Thanks for the great job you're doing for us. Hi, Kenny. If you're here for a public hearing, the appropriate time to speak on that would be when the hearing comes up. You want to come up and speak on it now because you want to go home, you're welcome to do that. Who would like to go next? Come on. Nobody else wants to speak? That was a joke. I know that you guys want to talk. Hi.
Surprise, surprise. Good evening, Mayor, City Council, City Staff, and residents of Morro Bay. My name is Deanna Kennedy, and yeah, I live here. First and foremost, I would like to thank all the business people and the residents of Morro Bay for their participation, I should say active, very active participation in our citywide yard sale. I had three individuals with me to help put it together, and I got to tell you, it, as far as I'm concerned, it turned out fantastic, but we couldn't have done any of it without our business people. You were very generous, and you were very kind, so thank you. My next item, of course, is, yes, we still have our veterans group going, and next Tuesday, it'll be the third Tuesday of each month, and I'm very happy to say that our numbers are growing as far as the individuals that I and the VA service office and the clinic downtown have been able to help. What we would like to do, though, is try to reach out even more. And I'm going to ask the business people, and I'm putting this out here, but I'd really like to ask the business people to make sure that the flyers get up in the windows. I have usually 25 to 50 printed out, and I'm finding not all of them are hitting the windows. And I know sometimes you just don't like to put a bunch of stuff up, but I'd truly appreciate it because you have a minimum of what I'm finding, a minimum of 1,000 veterans right here in Morro Bay. And we've only been able to touch, I would say, 50 to maybe 60. And I'd sure like to bring that number up. I know we have individuals.
Young lady, and then Bill can follow. Follow you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Good evening. My name is Christelle Puig, and I am a kindergarten teacher, resident of Morro Bay since 1997. And I am here to support and just speak in behalf of John Diodati, a great man that, since I have met him, have created such an impact, positive impact in my life and in our family, have always been a man that have cared for the community in a positive way, always working for the better of not only the business, but also those ones that don't own business and simply live here in Morro Bay. I just want to say that it's important for all of us to know that in order for us to be good community and neighbors, you also have to be an incredible family member. And those are qualities that John Diodati have had all his life, since I know him at least. He has always worked so hard to be involved in his free time and also keep intact in the most loving and kind way his family. That's to admire, and I would like for him to stay where he is because it is important for me to feel safe as a neighbor, as living in this community, and also for all of us to know that somebody really cares for us, not that somebody is just here just for their own benefit. So again, I'm just here to support a good family member and an incredibly great community person that really does so much for us. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming down tonight.
Thanks.
Good evening, Bill. Bill, and then you may follow, sir.
I'll make this short. Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is my name is Bill Suchak. I own a business along the Embarcadero. I'm here to read a letter that an email that was sent to all of you from Stan Trapp, who is Marina Square as well as Windows on the Water. So please bear with me. Mayor and Council, this email is to urge you to approve the business banners proposed for the Embarcadero. I realize that there is some opposition to diverting harbor funds from infrastructure needs to funding lamppost banners. There is some perception that the banners are only a cosmetic value. Please be assured that the banner project goes beyond cosmetic arena and is part of the overall plan to unify the Embarcadero into a single entity and give it a unified appearance and create a waterfront destination which can then be marketed. The funds requested amount to 0.2% of the reserve. The council has stated their interest in improving the appearance of the Embarcadero and has mandated businesses to work on their appearance. Approving and allocating these funds indicates the city is willing to share in that expense. Stan Trapp. My comment basically is, if it is only 0.2% of the harbor fund, think of the return that the harbor fund can actually get, which is somewhere between 3% and 10%. It's a good investment. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Sir.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, staff. My name is Walter Heath. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. And I just wanted to say that I want to encourage you to, as a council, to do everything in your power to encourage the participation of dedicated and capable members of the community who want to volunteer their time to serve on boards and commissions. I think every effort should be made to draw upon a valuable community resource such as we have here and work with folks and make sure that that we can include them to the greatest extent we possibly can. It sends a bad message to the community, I think, when we start to, you know, either target individuals or make it look like we're targeting individuals to exclude them from these bodies. So I hope you take that under advisement and know that we're watching. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Heath. Thanks for coming down tonight. Come right up.
My name's Evan Barbas, and I'm a homeowner here in Morro Bay. And I'm here to speak on John Diodati's behalf and the possible dismissal of him from the Planning Commission. From my point of view, Mr. Diodati is a strong asset to the city of Morro Bay. He's a family man vested in Morro Bay's well-being. He represents the new guard with fresh ideas to bring Morro Bay to the next level. Dismissing him would be a true shame to the council, the Planning Commission, and Morro Bay. He should not be penalized for a scheduling conflict brought on by the council. And I think it would be a true shame, and that you need to do your best to keep John around. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for coming down. Would you like to go next? David? Good evening.
Good evening, Council. I'd like to echo what the other people have said. Reading that article on the Telegram.
Just state your name for the record.
I'm sorry. David Nelson, resident of Morro Bay. I'd like to echo what you've heard, a stream of resources that I see marching through here all the time. And most of the time, they're ignored right from the beginning. We saw one of our neighbors from Cayucos a few meetings ago talk about how we have to address problems before hearings and that it's not right. And I have to agree with them, you know, to wait and have everybody come up and talk and then have you guys make a decision seems a little backward to me. Another thing that's been bothering me is Tank Farm. It's still here. How come? I mean, that thing was supposed to be gone a long time ago. I know weather's a problem, CEC is a problem, but our problem is a bankrupt company, and that's what we're dealing with. And you can't be giving these guys breaks because they're going to walk away from here. And it just seems dumb that we spend millions of dollars improving our waterfront, and they have an obligation, a contractual obligation through the lease to get rid of those tanks, and they were supposed to already be gone. We've taken excuse after excuse, and I don't think anybody else in this town would get away with that. If I was building a house and tried to pull that stuff, you guys would pull my permit and charge me fines. I just don't get it. You know, I don't believe corporations are people, and I know that some of you up there may believe that, But you know what? I don't believe that. I think people are people, and this is our town. And people that make contracts should follow them. And if they don't, you don't give them bonuses. You don't give them benefits. You don't let companies come in and say, I got to cut down your trees and walk away. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Who'd like to go next? Welcome, Ani.
Good evening. Ani Lin, resident of Morro Bay. I'm here on behalf of John Diodati, even though I've never met the man until tonight. We have a bullying problem in town, and it's not at the schools. It's in our business community. And I'm going to ask that this council show in their actions that they don't make votes to bully and to control. I seem to find myself in places where I hear things, and I wish a lot of times I didn't. And I recently overheard someone who had been before the Planning Commission complaining to a council member as I walked by. And her complaint was the problems she received in what she was presenting by John Diodati. Children learn to bully from the adults. This day of the Planning Commission changed after he was signed on. It's not hard to find out what he does on a Wednesday night. I truly hope that in your voting, you do not bully to control. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down and speaking, Ani. Who'd like to go next?
Good evening, Council. My name is Richard Harrison. I live in rural Cayucas. I don't know John real well either. In fact, I just met him recently. He's the coach of my son's Little League team. In fact, I'm not quite sure we're even on the same side of the fence on his issues, but I can attest for certain that he is an incredibly committed coach to the children, volunteering a minimum of 8 to 10 hours a week of his time. And I know that that's not an easy task, since I've done the same in the past. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for coming down. Step right up.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. I'm Dana Putnam. I'm a resident, homeowner, and parent here in Morro Bay. I'm also here to comment on the issue relating to John Diodati's position. I guess I would start by saying that I agree with the council that attendance to meetings is important. However, I think that it's also important that the the city council consider the commissioners and all of our volunteers in terms of scheduling. And I think that that really was where this issue kind of got started, and that it would be important for the city council to work with the commissioners who are volunteering their time and respect that time. I would also say that I've known John in different capacities, and one example I'd give is that when working on the issue around the solar panels, thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Putnam. Mr. Brannon, can you go next? I'm sorry you didn't see him. He's behind you. Then you may follow him.
Good evening, City Council. My name's Barry Brannon, Morro Bay. I'm here for two things. One is we have a joint powers agreement meeting. It's coming Thursday, 14th, and there's quite an extensive report that will be coming at the meeting, and it's very important, I think, that we have as many citizens as possible come and listen to find out what possible direction, because I think there is going to be a change in direction of what we've been doing. There's hired a new contractor. But on top of that, I'd like to piggyback that one of the primary people, one of the five that voted that we not accept the wastewater treatment permit, the Planning Commission that turned it down, was John Diodati. And this to piggyback on what Anna says, this really looks like bullying of one of the city council, one of the planning commissioners who voted against it. The city council overrode on this JPA, the sewer issue. So I want to say that it really doesn't look good, and I'd like to see you change your direction. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Brandon. Come right up. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, Council. My name is Zach Snyder. I'm a teacher in San Luis Obispo. Currently living in Los Osos, but prior to that lived in Morro Bay for about 5 years. And like many people here tonight, I'm here to speak in support of John Diodati. I just got word about this issue this morning. Actually, I think I overheard John mentioning something about it maybe a few days ago, but he sent me a link of the testimonial in the Tribune today, and I read that. So without knowing so much about the situation, I feel like it's hard for me to talk too intelligently, but from what I have seen, it seems like an unfair situation that's taking place. And apart from that, which I'm sure, everybody's capable of wading through the facts of the case themselves, but I would just like to say about John that in the few years that I've known him, one thing that I could say about John is I definitely see him to be a focused and committed person in everything he's involved with. I've seen him in a parental capacity because his boy is a super close friend of our boy, so we do family stuff together. I've definitely seen him make sacrifices on behalf of our family in terms of taking care of our kids when we've needed some time. I've seen the care and the love that he has with not only his kids but others as well. Obvious, example of that is just being a little league coach. He asked me to be an assistant coach this year, so I've had the pleasure of being out there a few times a week with him and with the kids. And let me tell you, he puts a lot of time, a lot of focus, and a lot of love into every practice that we have. Every hour and a half practice, he's breaking it down into 15, 20-minute sessions to make sure the kids get the most out of it, and never in a way that, gets them doggedly tired, or he's always positive with them. I just wanted to be sure that you guys all understand that, at least from my perspective, the ways that I've seen him committed in his life have impressed me, make me want to be a better man and dad in my own life. So I hope that we all have our facts straight and can kind of make sense out of it and just understand that this is a great guy who's willing to volunteer his time, not just for Little League, but also for this committee in a very committed way. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down tonight, Zach, and speaking. Step right up, sir, and you may follow.
John Sigler, I'm a Morro Bay resident. I just want to add my voice to the legion of people that have come up here to ask you folks to do the right thing tonight. You know what the right thing is. Do it.
Thanks for coming down, Mr. Sigler. Please come up, and Roger, you may follow this gentleman. Hi.
Hey there. Good evening, members of the council. My name is Marcus Jackson. I'm a 9.5-year resident of Morro Bay, father to two beautiful young children who attend school in the local district, and my wife is a special educator for nearly 10 years as well. I'm here to speak on behalf of Mr. Diodati. Briefly, over the last 6 years, I've had the opportunity to get to know Mr. Diodati. And as a fifth-generation resident of San Luis Obispo County, as someone who's passionately committed to community service, whether he's spending, taking his time to volunteer on a beautiful Saturday afternoon to build a worm box for the kids at Pacheco School where our children attend together, or whether he's serving the good people of San Luis County, to Mr. Diodati and to the community at large. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Jackson. Thanks for coming down tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Roger, maybe I could suggest you come up and stage yourself to get up here next. Roger Ewing goes after this young lady. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Karen Crowley. I currently serve on the Recreation and Parks Board. And I'm here to support John Diodati as a fellow advisory board member and also as an acquaintance. some of the remarks out there that he has a personal agenda, and I would just like to say that this is the type of person that does not have a personal agenda at all. His heart's in the right place, and that is the community, first and foremost. And I would also just like to reinstate that we keep it positive, that our volunteering, the spirit of, is in the spirit of the community, and it's for the better of everyone involved, and let's send that message. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming down, Karen. Roger? We knew we'd get you up here sooner or later.
Good evening, and thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I wish to lend my voice in support of those who have come before me in speaking on behalf of John Diodati and maintaining him on the Planning Commission. Like the speaker just before me stated, this is a political decision, I believe, and it's not the brightest political decision that Morro Bay is discussing. It's pretty blatant and very undeserving. I've watched almost every Planning Commission meeting in the last few years, and John Diodati has always brought to his deliberation integrity, due diligence, honesty, and not with any personal agenda. If there's an agenda involved in his decisions in the Planning Commission, it's an agenda based on our laws, our ordinances, and our codes, which he has always faithfully followed. He is an asset to our Planning Commission, and as many of the residents before me have spoken, he is also an asset to our community. And I think it's a shame to take someone of his stature and willingness to give and punish him for doing so is very wrong. So like the previous speaker said, I hope you change your mind. I hope you withdraw this item. And I hope you can maintain Mr. Diodati on our Planning Commission. You have politically a majority on that commission already. I think it's refreshing to have somebody with a different point of view. So please keep John on the board. Thank you very much, and have a good meeting.
Thank you, Roger. Thanks for coming down tonight. Who would like to go next? Hello.
Hello.
There's a blast from the past.
Yeah, Susan Mullen, former council member, and someone who has, in fact, participated in the firing of an entire planning commission. But we never targeted one person, Carla, in council. And we fired that planning commission because they were not carrying out the law of the city. This is far from that case. Whether you like John or not is really irrelevant. It's the precedent of trying to set up a system where you can come in after the fact and say, we're going to change the advisory body rules that have nothing to do with the Planning Commission, by the way. Nothing. The Planning Commission is ruled by the Muni Code. What you're trying to amend has nothing to do with the Planning Commission. I noticed that the city attorney didn't even sign off on this item tonight. I would strongly recommend that you pull this item, please. And if not, put it up now. Put it after this hearing. Don't make people sit here till 11 o'clock tonight to see you do this action in the dark after everybody's left. If you fire John in the dark tonight, it's not going to be a very comfortable time for the city council. I don't come out of mothballs because of minor issues here. I've had so many calls on this. It's unbelievable. People are up in arms because you want to do this one thing to this one individual. And it's not fair, it's capricious, it's arbitrary, it's discriminatory, and frankly, you have much, much bigger problems on your hands than trying to micromanage the Planning Commission. I'd like to see this item pulled as soon as public comment's over. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for coming down tonight. And it's nice to see you. Good evening.
My name is Lee Johnson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. Mr. Mayor, City Council members, thank you for... Number three, I'd request you consider how this process reflects on how businesses and individuals would view our community. I've lived and worked all over the world, and what I see here is someone, John Diodati, who's done everything he could do, followed the rules as they were written, got the approval that he was required to get to do what was important to him and for the community. And what happens? Somebody twists the rules, turns the rules, and finds a way to try and punish him. If I were a business, I would seriously reconsider if I was going to make an investment in this community. Lastly, I would like you, as the council, to ask yourselves if you've done everything possible to try and resolve this conflict that you, in fact, created. If you can look in the mirror and say you've done everything possible, like asking the Planning Commission to change the meeting times or change the meeting days, if you can really look at yourselves in the mirror and say you've done everything to try and keep a fully participating member of our community involved, then go ahead and vote to remove them. I don't believe that's the case, but if that's what you believe, then vote that way. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming down tonight, Lee. Hi.
Good evening. Richard Margetson, Cayucas. I agree with everything the last speaker said. I want to read from the editorial in the paper. When Diodati applied for the commission, twice a month meetings were regularly held on Mondays. In January, however, the City Council changed the Planning Commission meeting date to Wednesday. I think that was probably after the Planning Commission had denied the EIR and had sent the project back to you. So why was the meeting changed? Shortly after that, Mayor Yates, wanted to fire the entire commission. In the meantime, you've gotten three new commissioners. Mr. Diodati stayed on, is now the vice chair. The article continues. Diodati had already made a commitment to coach his son's team, and I commend him for keeping that commitment and trying to balance out the rest of his life by asking the Planning Commission to allow him to be late for what it turns out to be is only four meetings. That right there tells you he's a good father. It also tells you he's a good citizen of this community who needs to be respected and cherished. These are the type of people you need on your commissions, your councils, your advisory councils, people that are committed. He could have just said, I'm more interested in coaching my son's little league team. I don't believe you respect my contribution to the Planning Commission. Forget it. I'll move on. But he didn't. And yes, I know he has a different opinion on what should happen with this project than the majority of this council. But does that mean he should be removed? And I believe when you woke up this morning, Carla, I don't think you actually had any idea that this much backlash was going to come from this article. Further in the article, Carla Burchard believes that City Planning Commissioners should follow the same policies as members of other advisory boards, bodies. Is there a set of bylaws for this Planning Commission that specifically address what we're talking about tonight? I commend Mr. Diodati for sticking with it. I know that he's an intelligent individual. He's worked on the Los Osos Wastewater Project for years. He's developed a thick skin by doing that. And I hope at some point down the road he runs for this city council because I think he'd be a great member. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for coming down. Who'd like to go next? Good evening, Mr. Barta.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. First, I want to support your support, I hope, of item D2, the releasing of the Outrigger restaurant. For many years, this has been a sore subject, you know, with many in the community, and there's been a lot of controversy about what may or may not happen with that parcel, and I congratulate you on the apparent willingness to support transfer of that lease. Secondly, speaking on the item that everybody else has spoken on, I would only say, well, here I am. I'm following the first rule of good government. I'm showing up. It's something I did for over a decade as a member of the Planning Commission. Of course, I missed some meetings in the Planning Commission, too, in those 10 or 11 years. I think I missed two meetings. I was out of state for both of those. They're planning commissioners. And while it may not seem popular with some of the things you've heard here tonight, the fact of the matter is, you know, we are a municipality. We have responsibilities to the whole town. We have responsibilities to the people that come before the Planning Commission. And I urge you to keep all of that in mind when you make your decision later. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Would you like to go next? And then you may follow, Brian. Hi.
Hi. My name is Laura Lathrop. I live in Cayucas. My son Andrew is on John Diodati's team. And I just wanted to come here and let you all know that we fully support him. He is an incredible individual. In the short time that my son's been on his team, he has taught him quite a few lessons, you know, to be on time, to do the right thing, to play by the rules. And I read the article as well, and I'm incredibly concerned that it's come to this, and I really hope that you reconsider. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for coming down. Okay, Brian, and then Brian.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Brian Millard, Commander with the Morro Bay Police Department. I'm going to change momentum for just a quick moment to give out a word of thanks to the Council, to the Mayor, and to the community. As you know, on April 8th, we held our annual Tippecop dinner to support Slo County Special Olympics. As a result of the great community support, the efforts of everyone involved, we raised over $5,400 to support County Special Olympics. That makes it one of the biggest nights that Morro Bay's ever had locally, which is a testament to everyone who came to the dinner and who supported it by getting the word out. So my thanks and the thanks of the Slo County Special Olympics for that effort. The second item is to also reiterate what Councilmember Borchard said about the emergency vehicle show happening this Saturday, April 16th. It really isn't about the flashy equipment that's going to show up on our city streets. It's a fundraising effort to support nonprofits, and we really want to get that message forward as well. The police and the fire departments are supporting Morro Bay Neighborhood Watch and the Morro Bay Community Foundation. The proceeds from this event are being generated through the entrant fees and through a raffle that will occur the day of the show. Our goal is to bring people inside the city of Morro Bay to visit our town, to stay in our hotels, to eat at our restaurants, and help support our community, and also to raise awareness for emergency services workers and those in Neighborhood Watch and the Community Foundation that really bring this city together. So I encourage all of you to come out and support the event and also to participate, and thank you very much for your time. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Commander. Thanks for speaking. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, Mary Yates and Council. Brian Stacy, Morro Bay resident, commercial fisherman. I'm here. I'm sure Mary Yates is going to piggyback on this about the SBA being in town. I wanted to ask you guys to please consider putting the unfunded salmon disaster on your agenda, because we're losing a lot of money in this town over it. It's not just me and the other fishermen. It's every entity in town that benefits when a thriving salmon season's happening. And the people are coming to town. They're staying in the motels. They're going out on verges. The husbands are going out on verges. The wives are spending money all over town. It's a lot of money that didn't come to our town when they didn't fund that disaster. I wanted to thank Mary Yates for following up for me with the SBA. We did manage to get them to declare our disaster. Took me a month's worth of work. Many of you are aware of it, seeing some of the emails that were going around. I was forced to learn way too much about the whole disaster relief process just to understand why I didn't get my check at the last minute like that. We were all expecting our check. All the signs were there. I believe I created that particular correspondence from the California Salmon Council and the Fish and Game, and I think the word California has a lot to do with our problems, but I digress. I'd like to basically, I was wondering why I was forced to do so much work on this when we have a representative on the California Salmon Council, which is Mark Tognazzini. I think you need to get him up here to explain why we lost all that money, why that money's not in town circulating right now, why people are, you know, some guys are unable to haul their boats out. People are having to take these Small Business Administration loans, which is no easy task to get them. You're going to be lucky if you get one. And excuse me, I'm off script here. I'm just going off my head. You're going to be lucky if you get one. They're pretty tough qualification criteria, and they're never...
Good evening. Tracy Neal Suchuk, Suite 1 Gallery in the Embarcadero in Burgess Landing. I just wanted to let everybody know that Burgess has moved. We're up on Market Street at 1169. So now we have our sports fishing and our commercial fishing suppliers right there in one convenient location. We are running salmon trips, and Rock Cod opens in May, and we'll also be running Rock Cod as soon as we're open. So stop in and see us on Market Street. It's where Genie's used to be. Thanks.
Thank you, Tracy. Gary, come on up.
Well, good evening, everybody. John's got quite a following. I think he should run for city council. first of all, before I start off, Chief Olivas wasn't here the last time we had this meeting, and I wanted to thank
Gary, if you would be so kind.
Oh, Gary Johnson. Yeah, I'm just a resident of Morro Bay here. Yeah,
just a resident.
That you guys did a super. The police officers really did a super job with the tsunami. And also wanted to thank the volunteers, the police department volunteers. Those guys were out there for 8 hours. One of them got pretty well sunburned. Ed did. But anyway, I have nothing against John, and city council is going to do what the city council is going to do. I agree. Somewhat what John Barta said, we're running a business. What if an employee came up to you and said, I'm not going to show up every Wednesday for 6 weeks? But I'm here mainly to set this record straight. Carla has no conspiracy against John. If she had a conspiracy against John, she would have fired him the day she took office on the new city council. Now, we had a mayor previously that fired everybody on the planning commission. Fired everybody and had to rehire everybody. Carla's a decent person. She's looking at the city. What is the city going to do if we only have three people on planning if one has to step down? That's my concern. But like I said, I have nothing against John, and I'm looking out for the city itself. There's a lot of issues coming up on this planning, because every time something does come up, there's always somebody coming up with some kind of environmental issue or blah, blah, blah. But the other issue, okay, I said my sit on that. I just know that Councilman Johnson and Councilman Bouchard and the rest of you, if you wanted to fire John, you would have fired him the day you guys took office, and you didn't. So I'll put that to bed. As far as a previous person came up to talk about the tank farm, that was supposed to be ripped out last July, and I asked the director over there what happened. It's another one of these environmental issues. Environments upon environments, environmentalists, and that's what the problem was. Because when they take the tanks down, the money they get from the tanks almost pays for what it goes. In other words, if it costs $10,000 to take the tanks down, they're going to get $10,000 selling the steel. So I want to set that record straight. I think that's all I got to say. Anyway, hey, you got to make the decision. I don't, and I don't going to go one way or the other. I just, first of all, look out for the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Who'd like to go next? Hi.
Good evening, Council. My name is Josh Beckett. I'm a local resident, homeowner, husband, and father. And I'm here on behalf to support Mr. Diodati and echo all of those before me who had nothing but good things to say and lots of praise in regards to John and his family and his thoughts and his ideas. In regards to the previous couple gentlemen that were having things that more were focused about the city in general, I think Mr. Diodati is a huge asset to the city of Morro Bay. I think he wasn't fired in the beginning of when he became a commissioner or on the planning commission because we didn't all know him. We didn't know quite who he was or that he was going to ask the hard questions or that he would have the knowledge that he had in regards to the city, the history of the county, and those peers in the future that he is upholding with all of you and all of us. I've gotten to know John or Mr. Diodati over the last couple of years, and he, besides probably Mr. Smuckler, is probably the youngest, most caring and passionate and wants the best of Morro Bay, I think, that of anybody else in this town. He's all about the future. And I mean, even if I see him for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, he's got ideas, he's got thoughts, he just wants the better of the city more than anybody I know. And I think I agree with those others that say
structure of the harbor. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Come right up.
Good evening. My name is Erin Hadley. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I would just like to echo what everyone else has said already about Mr. Diodati. I would really like him to stay on the commission, and I urge you to make the correct decision here. And then on a completely separate note, I also would like to thank all of the people who worked so hard during the tsunami. I live in that neighborhood, and I was thoroughly impressed with how well we handled that situation, how well everyone was notified, and how well it was taken care of and information was shared. And thank you for doing such a fantastic job.
Thank you, Erin. Anyone else? Good evening, John.
Good evening, Mary Yates and council members. My name is John Diodati, and I live in Morro Bay. This is only the second time I've been before your city council. The first time was over 2 years ago when I interviewed and was selected to be a planning commissioner. And I remember one question in particular at that meeting in the interview. Can you commit to 4 years of Monday nights for these meetings? And my answer was yes, and I've honored that commitment. I've missed birthday parties, anniversaries, and even left my grieving family after a death to attend a meeting. And I know each one of you has made similar sacrifices to serve this wonderful community. And I thank each one of you for doing that. There is no question about serving for 2 years on Monday nights and 2 years on Wednesday nights. Like you, I have a life outside of the Planning Commission. And your council's decision to move the meetings to Wednesdays has created a temporary conflict that will require me to miss a few meetings. This handbook was given to us less than 2 months ago. It's the Planning Commissioner's Handbook. And you told us that this was our Bible, that this was that this was used to be our guide to a Morro Bay Planning Commissioner. And in this handbook it states, the Planning Commission does not have bylaws, but is guided by Chapter 2.28 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code. And we've attached that chapter for your ease of reference. I followed this handbook and the municipal code to a T in order to receive approval to miss these meetings. I used the exact same procedures as other commissioners who received approval to miss multiple meetings. I did exactly what you asked of me. Resolution 10-06, for which you're basing your decision on tonight, is not in this handbook. It is not in my planning commissioner Bible. Resolution 10-6 does not guide the planning commission. As the handbook clearly states, municipal code does. And if you have a problem with municipal code, then please do your job as council members and change the municipal code. I'm humbled by the show of support tonight from the community, and I want to thank everyone for their kind words. However, I wish none of us were here. The city has much bigger issues on its plate than questioning my volunteer priorities. I simply want to do my job as a planning commissioner, do my job as a Little League coach, be a father, a husband, and a community member. I trust you will respect the municipal code of our city, the direction you gave planning commissioners at our joint meeting, and make the right decision tonight. You have asked me as a planning commissioner to follow the rules of the city. I ask you to do the same.
Thanks, John. And please, 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 thank you. Anybody else? Anyone? Hi, Chris.
Mayor Yates, City Council, Chris Christensen, Morro Bay 4th, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, Morro Bay Lions Club. Wow, I'm shocked. I'm shocked this is even a discussion. John is a man of integrity. His wife has been on Morro Bay 4th for the last 2 years. We've worked together with John and his wife for that whole period of time. All kinds of issues. I know John to be a man of integrity. I was absolutely tickled when I found out that he was on the Planning Commission. Why this discussion is even taking place. Change the night of the meeting. Do whatever you have to do to take advantage of a young man of integrity, a young professional who cares about the community he lives in, who's volunteered his time and made himself available. Do what you have to do to utilize that talent. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Anyone else? Anybody? Going once? Going twice? I'll bring it back to council. Thank you. That was a lot of speakers tonight. We appreciate hearing from everybody. I'm going to run down the list, and with thanks to Christine and Jackie and Adrian for leading us off, Deanna and you're the kindergarten teacher. I didn't get your name. I'm so sorry. We're grateful. We certainly heard all your words. Bill Suchek and Walter Heath and Evan Barbas, David Nelson, Ani Lynn, Richard Harrison, Dana Putnam, Barry Brannon, Zach Snyder, John Sigler, Marcus Jackson, Karen Crowley, Roger Ewing, Susan Mullen. Great to see you. That public hearing started at 7, which means next. So we would be breaking the code. But I will go with the pleasure of the council. It seems reasonable. If you guys are willing to stick around, that we do it next. But I can get overruled here. Nancy?
Maybe we should get a judgment from our city attorney about breaking the rules.
You know, why don't you just look at your mayor, and your mayor will break the rule if the council majority wants to hear it next, we'll hear it next.
Okay.
But what I'm not hearing from you. Are you okay with this?
I don't mind. Get it over with.
Over here? We're going to take a 10-minute break. We will come back, and we will address the Mr. Diodati matter.
Hey.
D3. Oh, I'm sorry. We seem to be missing a council member. So we'll just sit here and look smart until he must be in the restroom. Here he comes. Sorry, Noah. Okay, we're going to address item D3 next. A couple words about Mr. Diodati here. I think everybody respects John as a community member and certainly as a father. 5 kids here. 6 kids here. 3 kids. 3 kids? You know, you add them up. You know, we've all been through the raising kids business and the sports. And there's not a question in our mind that John and his wife aren't great, fabulous parents and wonderful volunteers with their kids in their schools and with sports. There's just not a question about that, or his integrity. So I offer that right up on top, that nobody questions that. And I think all of the words about how great he is and great he is as a coach is great. I don't think it's relevant to what we're looking at here, but we do acknowledge that John is an important and valuable citizen and dad. Regarding the municipal code, it should be understood, I think, by everybody in the community that the planning commissioners, all the advisory board members, serve at the pleasure of the council. So regardless of how you read into what, or this paper says this, or this paper says that, that is the bottom line. So that said, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Borchard. It's her item, and take it away, Carla.
Thank you, Mary Yates and Council. I would like to take the opportunity before addressing the item just to clear up a few misnomers and make a comment, because I was not afforded the opportunity to comment on the Tribune's article. They apparently tried to reach me by cell phone, but no other means of when I was at work. I did vote for Mr. Diodati's appointment to the commission 2 years ago. I was one of the three votes that appointed him, and it does take three. And again, in December, when we had a new council and there was a consideration of removing the two remaining commissioners, I did not support it at that time either. I believe in diversity, and I respect it. I don't have to agree with them. That's not the issue. This issue, for me, was clearly only about the attendance requirement and providing due process to the community and the applicants as they come forward. I respect that he's coaching. All of us sitting in the audience, all of us sitting up here, have taken our share of volunteering in different organizations and things and trying to balance the commitments we make. That being said, my responsibility in this position is to provide a full opportunity for applicants coming before the Planning Commission to have a full commission when possible. I know that we changed the night to Wednesday nights, and that was due to changing council nights and consolidating other advisory bodies and AGP schedule. When you look at the issue that seems to be coming back about the requirements and the Planning Commission granting permission for the absenteeism, it was based on past commissioners requesting to miss three meetings. Municipal Code 2.28100 states that commissioners can request three absences. So the Planning Commission, in my opinion, does not have the authority to grant more than that and override the guidelines of the city, whether it be through resolutions, which the city attorney...
The government code and the municipal code both state that the Planning Commission does serve at the pleasure of the city council. And the absence requirements in our municipal code that deal with three regular meetings does not discuss what occurs with more than three regular meetings. It was written in 1967, and I didn't go back all the way to those minutes to try to get what the legislative intent was of that decision. But in 2006, which we can go back, and I was here at that time, the council did discuss the absences, and Council Member Baxley, I do have the minutes of that meeting in February 2006, moved that the City Council approve amending the attendance requirements for all city commissions and advisory boards to reflect the absence of a board member from three consecutive meetings or four meetings in any consecutive 12-month period will constitute the voluntary resignation of the absent member, and the position will be declared vacant. So at that time in 2006, it was the intention of the City Council to make certain that it applied to all City Councils and boards, and that the absence of more than three required the voluntary resignation. But that doesn't mean you can't grant exceptions to that, and any other options are available to you, because as I said, they serve at the pleasure of the City Council.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. And then I would just want to add that there was comments made that the commissioner, in regards to the position at this time, would be able to arrive at the meetings late and participate, but doing that would not provide the same level of information from public comment or commission discussion that the other members certainly would have and would be relevant on issues that they would be voting on. So I brought this forward tonight along with Councilmember Johnson for the council's deliberation and discussion on how we should best handle the absenteeisms and the guidelines of all the advisory boards for that absentee.
Mrs. Johnson?
First, I feel the need to apologize to my fellow council member, Carla Borchard, because she took the flack for this. And when this issue first came to our attention, the two of us sat down and discussed what the issues were, checked the city policy, and we made a decision that Carla would make a friendly phone call to Mr. Diodati to talk about the issue of missing so many meetings. Now, just a little background. I did serve as chair of the Planning Commission, 2 years of those with John Diodati, and found him to be an exceptionally capable, hardworking member of our group. We didn't always agree, but we certainly agreed to disagree. And this has nothing to do with his abilities, with his character. He, I believe, is a man of fine character, and he has real abilities in, along these lines. And there's no question, as you've heard before, that spending time with your family and your children is the most important. You just can't do both at the same time. After trying, Carla talking to John, this whole thing quickly escalated, just sort of out of control. And I'm sorry that happened. I don't think it's an appropriate use of our time or news time to let something that should have been a simple discussion go this far. Applicants who come before the Planning Commission deserve a full board. Last week's project was a $240,000 project. It's probably the largest project we've had in this town since Morrow Cove. We 24, yeah, it's 24 units on the corner of Main and Bonita. We don't know what conditions might have changed had Mr. Diodati been there. They did make some changes to the application. This developer deserved to be heard by a whole full planning commission, just as every citizen in this town does. You need to have every planning commissioner there. Just a couple of comments on things we've heard tonight. No one is targeting John Diodati. The editorial in today's paper was terribly inaccurate and one-sided. And you can't carry out your responsibilities if you're not there. The other thing I kept hearing several times was honoring the rules of the game. The rules of this game are that if you accept a commitment to be a member of a commission, especially the Planning Commission, you need to be there. So we just asked John to make a decision, and this is what happened. That's all I have to say right now.
With the meetings, and as I recall that discussion, we focused that discussion on council meetings, and I agreed to shift the meetings to Tuesdays because of the agenda. When it came back to us as a consent item, the changes in other meeting advisory board and planning commission meeting days of the week were included in that consent item, and I think it's pretty obvious and understood that none of those boards were consulted. So what we have are a changing situation for community volunteers that have lives, that have come out and stepped up to the plate to help us address the businesses of the city, and we have created a scenario where we change that out from under them. As John said, when he applied, he was asked that question: what are you able to make Mondays for 4 consecutive years? And he responded yes, and he's done that. His attendance at meetings up until this point has been exemplary, and we all know his work on the Planning Commission has been great. So I think the responsibility lies for us to address this situation and recognize that it's a special situation. This is not something that's going to continually happen because, as we know, we've set these meetings on Tuesdays for the first time, shifting the meeting day of the week. And longer than I've been involved with the city, I've not seen this happen once. So if we allow this to happen tonight, that becomes a very subjective change in the rules of the game. And I don't think it's fair to our advisory board members. I don't think it's fair to the Planning Commission. I think we have the ability to recognize this as a one-time special event, and I hope we would do that. The other component that troubles me is we've just spent a lot of resources sending these commissioners all to a training workshop and asking them to make sure that they come up to speed and spending money on that. And John is one of those planning commissioners that stepped up to the plate and took time off, went out of town, and spent a lot of time learning about how to be a better planning commissioner. And for us to throw that away and spend the amount of time that's going to now be required if we go ahead with this to find another planning commissioner, appoint them, the hours we've spent here tonight, I just find myself disappointed again that we're going to be spending our time and resources on this sort of a discussion rather than the other business that we have. It looks like there's enough votes to proceed with this. The question I would have then is, what's the process forward? How does this work? Do we want to make up the rules now about John? Is he on the Planning Commission until he misses those three meetings, and then the action takes place? There's too many questions surrounding this decision to think that this is going to be a clean, easy decision. And I think that's why you see as many people out here as we do tonight, because this is very convoluted and it's not fair. So those are my comments, and I just hope that we could pull back from this, recognize that this is a one-time special event, and yes, we do need to get more clear bylaws put together and really be more concise about how we would like our Planning Commission to operate, and I think everyone would agree with that. So that's what I would assert should be our action tonight, not taking the process that's been put forward in front of us from Ms. Borcher and Ms. Johnson.
I'm going to give it back to you.
I guess my question to Councilmember Smuckler would be that then you find it acceptable to grant missing five meetings plus the meeting he missed last month, so six meetings out of last year there was 19, and not have an issue that applicants coming before the commission aren't afforded an opportunity for a full commission, which could cause delays, costly delays, if there's not a vote of approval, and then that forces it to us. So that's okay with you? You find that?
Again, we created this conflict, and we should have thought of that when we changed the meetings. We should have had some outreach, particularly to the Planning Commission, being five very, very reachable members that had made a very specific commitment. And us changing that commitment out from under them, we should recognize that we changed the rules and that it's our responsibility to make the adjustment and try with every, you know, hindsight 2020, recognize that we never want to make this mistake again because of the amount of time that's involved with this and the outpouring of community support.
And I would just refer that when we held the Planning Commission interviews, we did mention then back in January that there was potentially a change of the meeting night. So all the new commissioners knew, and we said, are you flexible with what night it is? Are you flexible if we change it from Monday to Wednesday? Is there flexibility there? So meetings are going to change. Nights are going to change. That's a given. And you know, I was not questioning his attendance in the past, but last year he missed three meetings. So we don't say it's exemplary, because that's all you're allowed to miss according to the rules. You know, we all miss meetings. We all have things. I understand that. But, you know, there's not perfect attendance there. So
what do you want to do?
I don't want to get off track there.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Mr. Diodati wasn't involved with those interviews. I actually had
a situation. I think tonight we had two very articulate assistant coaches who were here and I'm sure could step up two nights a month and help with that team. I do commend John's interest in spending time with his family. That's exceedingly important. In terms of your comment about the training session, I think Mr. Diodati knew before he went to the training session that the dates had changed and that he had Little League coach, yet he chose to go to that meeting thinking that we would excuse him because he was coaching, and I can't accept that. I think we need to be fair above all else to our people, to people in this community who are applying for building permits, and that's really kind of the bottom line.
Just one more follow-up, if possible.
Last time, then we're going to move on. Yeah,
go ahead. And at that point, as far as I've seen, the Planning Commission has had a process for actually accepting some sort of conflict, and John has followed that process. So I think for us to outside of the Planning Commission's unanimous decision to grant it, calling him an asset, for us to then come in on top of that and try to change this at this point, to me it's just very uncomfortable. And I would like to know now then, if you want to move forward with this, what's the process from here? How does this work? We're setting a precedent that I don't think has ever happened before. And how do we see this happening? And is this a change to the municipal code, or are we creating new rules, and will that be introduced at future meetings as a first and second hearing? I mean, there's so many questions around this. This is so messy, and it's very frustrating to find ourselves here in this position.
Well, I'm going to suggest that we figure out what's going to happen here, that you want to kind of solve this before any action, and I don't know what the action's going to be, if there's going to be an action, what's going to happen. So let's hear from Carla. Let's move this forward now.
I've asked all along is that whether it's Mr. Diodati or any other planning commissioner, they adhere to the rules of attendance. And if you want to use 2.28, then the rules of attendance say 3 meetings. And if Mr. Diodati's, I would appreciate that he's at the meetings. I'm not looking to get rid of him. I want him at the meetings. But I can't. For me, it's, you know, it doesn't matter what he was doing, whether it's coaching or being at another job or whatever. I'm here for the good of all the public that come before the Planning Commission as an applicant, and that's how I see it.
I'm going to ask you to be more specific in exactly what you want. I mean, now he's talking about late meetings. I mean,
to require attendance, participatory attendance. I think that's what attendance means. You can't participate if you come late to a meeting. You can't. You're not providing due process, and it would be a conflict to vote on issues.
Well, I'm looking for what you want to do here. Do you want to make?
I'm asking the rest of council. I'm requesting that he attends the meetings, or we declare the position vacant.
Well, then make a motion to that effect, please.
I'm requesting the motion would be to request the planning commissioners attend the required meetings with no more than 3 missed meetings. And if not, declare the position vacant.
Second.
Okay, discussion. I think we need clarity on late. She said missed the meeting. Well, he comes in 45 minutes late. You know, did he miss the meeting? So I think it's fair to get clarity on that.
Then I would say at the beginning, when the meeting is called to order, that's when the meeting begins. When the meeting is called to order, the meeting begins.
Okay, we have a motion, so let's see what happens. Any discussion over here? No, would you like to speak next?
Please, thank you. Just to take a step back from this, I believe there are 3 meetings left on Mr. Diodati's schedule that are conflicting with his coaching commitment. And he has said that he'd be able to make those meetings a half hour late. So essentially, as far as I understand, this is all coming down to an hour and a half from this point forward. And this is where I think we have some leeway and we should apply that. My other concern is if you're afraid of a planning commission without a member, by following the process that you just laid out, we're going to be going through an application period and then a hearing, and I think we're going to be setting up a situation where we're going to have even more absences on the planning commission because of this excusal of the commissioner. So I just don't see how this is actually going to solve the real legitimate problem that you're trying to address.
May I respond?
Can I ask a question here first?
And he has to be there at the beginning of the meetings, so you didn't really have to move it till 7. And I do say that because of due process issues. If someone came during the public comment speaker or spoke on it and he arrived after the meeting had started, you'd have a due process issue that I'd be concerned of from a legal standpoint. So if you're going to change it, you better make certain that he's there at the beginning of the meeting so he hears the whole public testimony.
That's important to me, too. He's there at the beginning, because if you walk in a half an hour late and then you start asking questions that have already been asked and answered, that bogs down the meeting. Now, we just heard 6:30, and now I'm hearing 7. If you just answer the question, yes or no, can we, if we accommodated The meeting's to start at 6:30. Can you show up then?
I can show up at 7. My proposal was to have the public comment and the housekeeping stuff happen for the first half hour, and then I would arrive in time for the public hearings, no problem.
Okay, you know, I don't know where the line is. I mean, I'm trying to accommodate you,
and
now
I understand.
Gone to an hour.
And the other May 4th is we don't have a game, so that the noticing isn't an issue there, I believe, for the next game.
Okay, thank you, John.
May I respond?
You may respond.
Thank you.
May respond.
just in terms of arriving and missing public comment, oftentimes there are people who come to public comment who can't stay for the whole meeting, and I feel it's extremely important that all commissioners be there to hear the public comment. It's part of the process. If you're going to be there, you have to be there at the very beginning. The other thing is, as I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Planning Commission has an ending time of 10 o'clock. If we're moving this back to start at 7, and we have a large agenda, and granted, we haven't had major agendas lately, but there are some things coming along that are going to take some more time. 3 hours is probably not enough, because we've used 4 hours many, many times with discussion on larger, important projects for people. So that's where I stand. Thank you.
George?
I'm kind of getting mixed up here. How many meetings are we talking about you missing? You said you can come to one, and the next one you can't, or clarify.
Thank you, John Diodati. I didn't introduce myself last time. I originally brought my proposal forward as a security that there was 5 meetings, because the municipal code says that you need to get approval from the Planning Commission. So I got approval for 5 meetings, not knowing what the schedule was yet. Turned out that we have a buy on May 4th. There's already been one meeting gone by, so there's 3 more meetings. The second meeting in May, and I believe the first one in June. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but there's 3 more meetings that this would affect.
Okay.
So it's 3 you're going to miss?
It's 3 more, yes.
3 more.
I've already missed one.
Okay, so a total would be 4.
Yes. I'll look at my calendar.
Do you have something on the focus back here? Anything? So the motion then is we stick with the 3 meetings, and if he misses 3 meetings, he's out. I mean, that's basically it in a nutshell. Correct? That how you understand the motion? Since you're the motion maker.
That's the motion. I would hope that he would make the meetings.
Okay, any further discussion on this? Any further discussion over here?
Just one more, because what was brought up by Mr. Smuckler was that... When does this take effect? When he actually misses the meeting? I mean, if he misses, let's say he misses 2 more meetings and he shows up for the 3rd meeting, it's fine?
It's not in a row. It's
that's why. I know it's not in a row. I'm just talking, okay. But if let's say that he, for example, here, if he missed 2 meetings. I don't know if you're going to allow him to come late or not. I haven't got clarification on that either. But let's say that he missed 2 meetings, that he's talking about 3, right? And this 3rd meeting, he says, coaches, you got to take over. I'm out of here. And he gets there, then he's still a commissioner.
You want me to try this, Carl? Here's the way I understand it. Let's not go back to last year, but we will include you've missed 1, right? This is getting – he's missed 2? Okay, I guess you can miss 1 more, and if you don't show up for the 4th?
It appears we will. What will be the process?
Well, we don't know that. I think everybody's hoping here that John's going to rearrange things and he's going to show up. I think that's what's – last chance, and then I'm going to take a vote. We've gone way too long on this.
The municipal code says that I'm dismissed if I miss 3 unapproved meetings. So I have these meetings have been approved by the Planning Commission. So the municipal code has me covered there, which wasn't discussed tonight. But I will say I'm not missing April 20th. I looked at my calendar as the next meeting. Is that correct, Rob?
Yes.
Okay. So I will miss that meeting. That'll be one meeting that I missed when I was in Washington, D.C. for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. That was unexcused. And then two meetings that were approved by the Planning Commission per the municipal code.
And you can get away with that. It's the fourth meeting that gets in hot water if you miss the fourth meeting. Any further discussion on this? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. Thank you for staying till the very end on this, and I hope we've had some resolution on it. We're going to go straight to public hearings after the room clears. And Nancy, this is your step down. I think you need to.
Yeah.
You want to wait for the room?
That was painful.
Yeah, because she grabbed it. That's exactly the same. But did that work out okay? That's what you wanted? Okay. If we could clear the room, I would be grateful. Thank you. Nancy?
I will be stepping down on item B1. See you later.
B1, Ms. Luker.
If Councilman Johnson, the FPCC also requires you to state why, and it's because your property, you own real property within the 500-foot radius, and also because you spoke at the Planning Commission meeting, which might create a bias situation.
Do you want me to say that over again?
No, I said it for you.
You said it for me. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is appeal of the Planning Commission's decision on March 2nd, 2011, to deny the appeal of the removal and replacement of 8 trees located in the city right-of-way. And I believe Rob Leivick, our Public Services Director, will be taking this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Luker, Mayor, City Council. Rob Leivick, Public Services Director. This item was heard at the Planning Commission and appealed to the City Council. Pacific Gas and Electric owns and operates high-voltage electrical distribution lines within the city of Morro Bay under a franchise agreement. This fall, a tree caused a power outage where approximately 6,000 PG&E customers lost power for approximately 5 hours. PG&E has a program called Right Tree, Right Place, where they have problem trees that require repeated pruning to comply with the statutory requirements for safety, and they replace those trees with a more suitable tree near power lines, and that program is attached to the staff report. The city staff met with PG&E vegetation management forester Greg Sines again in the fall to discuss trees that will qualify under the program. 9 trees were identified under the program located I won't read the list, but basically surf beach market areas where the majority of the trees were, and then one at 2511 Juniper Street. The city has withdrawn the tree at 2511 Juniper Street from the program at this time. The city also has interest in removing the trees in the downtown area due to root damage caused by trees lifting the sidewalk, causing trip hazards. And it, again, it would be beneficial to plant a more appropriate tree for the small tree wells in the urban environment. And would took public testimony and deliberated on the appeal and subsequently denied that appeal. The appellant, again, filed an appeal to the City Council within a 10-day appeal period, and the appellant has requested that the trees be trimmed to accommodate power lines until the city has an official plan for trees along commercial streets. Staff recommends that the City Council deny the appeal of the Planning Commission's decision and allow PG&E to remove the inappropriate trees and plant with more appropriate vegetation. That concludes my staff report. Thank you.
Any questions for Rob? Carla? Over here. Ms. Cole? Oh, that's what the noise is. Now we know. It's her assisted listening device. Good evening, Ms. Cole. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to talk before this. You may have 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and fellow council members. I'm Robin Cole, and I live at 2581 Juniper Avenue here in Morro Bay. Mayor Yates, I know that you have been a supporter of our beautiful trees here in Morro Bay on at least two occasions. One concerned the state park's proposed removal of over 200 trees, which was later reduced to less than 100 as a result of the protest that you supported. The second case involved your questioning the removal of the Monterey cypress at the high school. Clearly, you demonstrate a preference for planning before cutting. You've been heard to say it's all in the process. My initial concern centered on the proposed removal of a majestic Monterey cypress adjacent to my property. PG&E had stated that this tree interfered with their power lines, although it had been pruned many times to accommodate those lines. I was surprised to view a notice of removal nailed to the tree one morning. After sharing my concern with the City Council, I then was approached by 10 supporters who had like concerns, and they encouraged me to submit an appeal, which I did. I later learned that some 20 other trees were in jeopardy, so I submitted an addendum extending my concern for them. This was later reduced to 8 trees now before you. Based on objections by myself and others, the cypress by my house was removed at the 11th hour just before the appeal for the time being. In my appeal before the Planning Commission, I did not mention sidewalk issues because there was no sidewalk under my neighborhood tree, and I felt that that was a whole other issue. Now I can see that many of these other trees are located in commercial areas on Beach, Harbor, and Main. I wonder why our council, as supporters of business issues, would advocate the destruction of these valuable 60-year-old trees which provide shade and beauty. How stark Market Street would become without those colorful redbud eucalyptus trees softening the otherwise rather unremarkable scene. How ridiculous those proposed $50 saplings would look on that wide street. Saplings which will take another 3 generations to reach maturity. These commercial streets seem to be victims of a double standard. While Main Street, Harbor, and Morro Bay Boulevards have had some sidewalk repairs to accommodate the trees, those on Beach, Market, and parts of Main Street have had no repairs. Then there is the issue of legality, which was not clearly presented to the Planning Commission. Municipal Code Section 12.08.110 regarding a utility permit was not included in the report. Another section of this code was identified by number 12.08.070, but the exact content was not stated, leaving the Commission uninformed. Removal by city for cause. Commissioners During the first hearing, neither the planning staff nor the city attorney informed the commissioners of the municipal code's relevance to the hearing, even though these code sections were read by a citizen reporter of the appeal. The commissioners did not address these codes at all in their comments. Now let's consider the maintenance costs for the existing trees versus costs associated with their removal and replacement. Yes, PG&E will remove the proposed trees at no cost. It will haul away any debris less than 4 inches in diameter. Let's now consider the impact of large trees on the environment, property values, and microclimate. Obviously, they provide shade, beauty, and bird habitats. They enhance and they elevate real estate values on adjacent properties. But there are countless other services that they provide. A few examples. According to the website for the Center for Urban Forest Research, a mature tree with a 48-inch diameter, think Monterey cypress, will intercept up to 7,000 gallons of storm runoff each year, acting as a mini reservoir and filtering out road and other pollutants while preventing erosion. A 24-inch diameter eucalyptus will add a value of $215 a year to your property. This same tree will reduce the atmospheric carbon by 1,197 pounds per year. In comparison, an average sedan produces 11,000 pounds per year. Finally, please consider posting advance notice of pending decisions which influence citizens' lives, in particular their property values, in this case, the removal of the trees in public places. Every citizen should have the chance to give input to these decisions and have a voice in their city government. As it is now, the city first makes a decision, then an appeal can be filed at the cost of $250. Instead, how about a preliminary meeting or hearing before a decision is made? At the appeal made by the Planning Commission, 2 citizens supported denial, while 10 citizens reported the appeal. I would like to believe that the city officials carry out the wishes of the majority of concerned citizens rather than making decisions which are not supported by them. In conclusion, in the words of Mayor Yates, it is all about process. I have been in the process of learning complexities of this tree issue, which I never even thought of. This new knowledge is reflected in my latest requested relief of action, in which I acknowledge that some trees do present hazards or are simply diseased and need to be removed. An example, the butchered tree on Surf that may fall down before we can even remove it. I now state in my request that no tree should be cut down until the city implements a process, an official plan. We need to do necessary grinding now, whether the trees come out or not. Meanwhile, we can formulate a definite long-term plan to replace individual trees as needed, rather than cutting down trimmable trees. A gradual replacement policy will maintain the appearance of our streets and ever increase the value of our real estate while minimizing the impact on our environment. This is the time for starting to plant the right tree in the right place at the right time, not for destroying healthy, beneficial, mature trees. This plan could be implemented by the Parks and Rec Commission, which should encourage participation of the citizens of Morro Bay who need to feel that they have a voice that is heard in our city government. I've learned a lot about this issue, yet I still need to learn a lot more. I hope that I have enlightened you too a bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Cole before I open it up to the public or for staff? Thank you very much. Okay, this is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us on this, step right up. Mr. Nelson.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
PG&E representatives are also here in case the council has any questions.
That is the fair way. I'm so sorry. Thank you, Rob.
Yes.
PG&E, please. I'm very, very sorry.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and members of the council. My name is Patricia Wilmore. I'm the local area manager for government relations for PG&E. And I'm simply here tonight with our vegetation management forester, Greg Sines, to support the recommendation of your staff and to ask you to uphold the decision of your planning commission and to deny the appeal. And should you have specific questions about vegetation management or this Right Tree, Right Place program, then Mr. Sines would be the person to answer that. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Patricia. I apologize for not calling up. Any questions for PG&E before I open it up? Okay, now we're at Mr. Nelson and anybody else who would like to follow him.
Hello, David Nelson. I live on Juniper, and I think this is really about guys use 10-penny galvanized nails to put up plastic signs on my cypress tree across the street. There are at least 8 staples, and there are galvanized nails still in there. Walk down Market Street, and I guess this is part of my big thing here. Walk down Market Street, and they had these trees condemned before because they all have galvanized nails nailed into the tree to hold up a piece of paper. This is wrong. It's against the law to spike trees. Those trees are spiked. As Ms. Cole said, where are we going to get the money to follow up this stuff? Who's going to grind those trees? Nobody's going to grind those stumps. It's up to us. I understood today that we have 5 part-time employees working 5 days a week with no benefits in our town. That, to me, is an embarrassment. And now we're going to commit how much money? Nobody knows how much money it's going to cost to replace these trees. These trees can be trimmed. A couple of the trees probably need to be taken out, the one at the end of Surf right down here. But that was because of poor management on PG&E's part. So we can't allow them to go in and ruin our trees and then tell us that they've got to come down, which is at the end of this street, which is a shame because it's an old tree. That tree on Juniper, I measured the front of it. It's over 5.5 feet and just in the front. I couldn't get behind it because it drops off. But, you know, you're talking about an 8-foot diameter tree that sucks up more hydrocarbons than any other tree in our neighborhood, and you want to take it down. It's been trimmed. If you go on the side of it, they have a corridor cut right through it. We've never had an outage. The outage that they had was a palm tree that a palm frond flew off and hit, so why don't we cut down all the palm trees because they might have problems. And one other tree, the Johnsons have a redwood tree in their yard that's going to grow up to be 100 feet and it could collapse on houses plus utility lines. So pick those trees.
Thank you, David. Who'd like to go next? Anybody?
Good evening. My name is Debbie Heifel. I live at 595 Kings. And I'm reading segments tonight from a letter from a Morro Bay resident who couldn't be here, Monique Nelson, who lives at 2580 Juniper Avenue. But before I do, I'd like to include a comment of my own that there's no compelling reason to comply with PG&E's request. Their rules state that trees are removed when they pose a hazard to their workers. But in this case, no one's getting hurt by the trees. PG&E has the budget to periodically trim trees, as they do on my property. And I agree that there may be a couple trees that need to be removed, but I would just ask that you not make a blanket policy of ripping out all trees. I would like to see it looked at individually because they do have value, and I thought Ms. Cole did. She enlightened me. That was interesting to hear exactly what they do for the environment. So to me, the issue is inconvenience for PG&E and the tourist value and the resident value of the beauty that those large trees and environmental value that those large trees offer us. That's the issue. Just a few, not the whole letter, but just a few paragraphs.
Ms. Nelson asks that, again, just what I said, that she requests that you review each tree individually rather than lump them together for an all-or-nothing treatment. I should note that I'm not and don't claim to be a tree expert. I have no wish for anyone to be hurt by an unsafe tree. However, there appears to be nothing in the staff report or record showing that these trees have been inspected by an independent professional arborist and that such arborist found the trees to be unsafe or unhealthy. Nor does there seem to be a finding by an arborist that these trees could not be trimmed in a way to preserve the health of the tree while maintaining wire safety. We could have both. They get the wire safe, we get the tree's beauty and health benefits. We seem to have only PG&E's assertion that these trees should be cut down because without regular trimming, they interfere with their wires. As detailed in my March 2nd comments to the Planning Commission, these trees are a valuable resource to Morro Bay. Beyond the beauty and health benefits they provide, these trees have an economic value. Their value far exceeds the $50 or 15-gallon container saplings that PG&E wants to provide under their Right Tree, Right Place program. According to PG&E's Right Tree, Right Place plan, they would either pay the city $50 or give them a 15-gallon. And the last sentence is...
Thank you. We've got to end.
Okay.
We are in receipt of the letter. I know that's not the same.
Not on surf. On beach was ugly and trimmed poorly, and I don't think there's much more uglier trimmed tree than this one here, which also is reaching into the electrical lines. But now look at the trees that are being proposed for being cut. This is one of two trees down on Main Street in front of Limos and Culligan's, and it's not even close to the wires. This is one of the eucalyptus on Market Street, and if you can see, the top of the pole is where the top wire is. And so, again, this tree is well below where it needs to be. Here's another better example. Again, the electrical lines are at the very top of the pole. This is the one that's on Beach Street that they think is too bad-looking, that it needs to be cut down. This is the whole row on Market Street. So you're talking about taking out 5 of those trees. That whole site will be completely gone with literal miniature trees. I think it's important to note that on the bottom of the list of the trees that PG&E gave to the city, they said, and next year we're going to look at the trees on Shasta and on Harbor. So to me, this is the beginning of what they're going to do across the commercial area, the business downtown area of our city, without a plan. And I think that that was the key for me with Ms. Cole's new applications. All she's asking for is not that things not be done, but you have a plan in place to do that. And we haven't got that plan in place. And it's only fitting that the city be able to, the people, know what's going to happen when you take out all those eucalyptus flowering on Morro Bay Boulevard, Harbor, Shasta, and Main Street. I'd like to make my last point, and Mr. Olivek did quote the rule, and it does say that the utility can take things out when it's at their workers' safety. That's where the shall comes in, when their workers are in harm, not because of the city. And that's where the twist has come with this appeal, that it was an appeal of the PG&E request. It was not an appeal of what the city wants to now happen with the sidewalks. And I think it was a good point that why not shave these sidewalks as they have in other parts of town? Why be discriminatory?
Thank you, Betty. And thank you for returning that. Anybody else? Hi, Roger.
Hello. Good evening once again, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing, Morro Bay resident. I'm here in support of the appeal, of course, but I do recognize and understand the problems and concerns that Public Works have with maintaining our sidewalks, etc. However, we also need to recognize that a tree is more than just a four-letter word on a piece of paper. It's a very living, breathing ecosystem that not only benefits us, it benefits the environment, it benefits the ecology, keeps the birds in the trees so we can have the signs up that say we are a tree city and we are a bird sanctuary. There are some of the trees, as has been said, that need to come down, but my concern is with the desire to move all these trees, destroy them all in one fell swoop. And it has been pointed out that's going to leave a very vacant view shed, as well as a shock to the ecosystem, so to speak. So I would encourage you to pursue a suggestion that one at a time, or one when necessary, have a plan to deal with trees that are a problem to PG&E. The right to do business in Morro Bay, PG&E's right, is to trim the trees. That's the cost of doing business, excuse me, is to trim the trees when needed. Not the city to trim the trees, not the city to do this, PG&E. So let's hold them to what should be. Let's not allow them to come in and destroy trees just because they're there and they can. Take some initiative. Take some control. Keep in mind that the whole city has trees. They're all a part of what we call what's good in Morro Bay. They add to our quality of life. Thank you. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, Roger.
And make the right decision, please.
Thank you, Roger. Anybody else? Anyone? Going once? Going twice? Back to council. Questions? Noah, start with you.
Yes, I would like a little bit of clarification on the question about what's next and the mention of Shasta and Harbor. Is that been discussed? And if this were to follow through as has been presented, do you anticipate us taking similar action in other places?
I know PG&E can probably speak better to this. I know they have a regular inspection program.
Forest management plan with public services with Rob Leivick. We have discussed the idea of having an intern come in from Cal Poly's urban forest program to help develop that plan. Right now we are going into the budget cycle, and we're hoping to work that into a priority that we could start with the management plan this summer, if all things go well. But as far as the formal plan, we're still working on it.
George? Carla?
Yes, either Ms. Hansen or Mr. Leivick, could you please tell me the row of trees on Market Street? It says on the list here there's three of them, and when I looked, there was three of them marked, but Ms. Winholtz is alluding to that the whole row of five trees are to be cut on Market Street.
There is three on Market Street. One of them, there's four along that street, but one of them goes with the beach street because we go with the front property.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying. So three on Market, and then the other one would be on the corner of Beach and Market. Okay.
Yes, it has a Beach Street address, but the tree is actually on Market.
Okay. So it's not then the whole row. It's just three in that grove?
No, it's the whole row. It's just one of them has a Beach Street address. Is how we notice the trees is by the property's address?
Well, there's when I looked on the street, they weren't all tagged.
Yeah, the very last tree on Market is not being removed. So there's five there, and so that last one is not being removed.
Thank you.
Does PG&E want to clarify anything that has come up? You may. Sure. And I'll give Ms. Cole the last word.
Hello, my name is Greg Sines. I'm a forester with Pacific Gas and Electric, mayor, councilperson. I just wanted to thank you for the public process and for your time this evening. PG&E's obligation to trim trees is dictated by the California Public Utilities Commission. And so, you know, that is something that all utilities in California must comply with. Our removal replacement program is strictly voluntary, and it has been popular with other communities. It's an opportunity to remove inappropriate trees, not only for overhead restrictions, but also for hardscapes and sidewalks. And so,
would you do us a service?
Absolutely.
This is great what you're saying. Could you just focus it on the eight trees here? This is what the hearing's about. And
sure.
This is great information, but It's getting late. We've got a huge agenda. So if you could just do that, that'd be great.
The red flowering gum are inappropriate to have under power lines, and so we would like the opportunity to remove and replace them.
Thank you. That was succinct. Ms. I'm sorry for cutting you off. It just, you know. Ms. Cole, do you want to have a last word here? Unless it's not required. Oh, you can't hear. Can you hear me, Ms. Cole?
Yes.
Do you want to have the last word? It's not required. I just want to give you the opportunity.
Well, all of the trees.
You'd have to step up to the microphone, though.
I got to invest in my own, I guess.
City property.
All of the trees in question are not the red bud eucalyptus. I think that clarifies something that was said.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. I'm bringing it back to council now. Here's the way I see it. It's eight trees that PG&E and our staff feels should come down. It is not a wholesale massacre of the trees in town. Five of the eight at least, are the red gum. And I don't know about you guys, but what I've heard over the years is, those trees. I can't wait to get rid of those trees. So it's not a very popular tree. They're beautiful, and I love the trees just like anybody else. If we took out eight trees this year and eight trees next year and eight trees the next year, and in 10 years we will have replaced 80 trees. That still leaves hundreds of trees. So it's not a wholesale massacre of the trees. So, you know, I'm supporting PG&E and staff's recommendation, and, you know, let them remove the trees. So that's where I'm at. Who wants to go next? Carla?
I would agree with that.
George?
I agree.
Noah?
Not to get too long-winded, but I am very uncomfortable with the idea that is the direction we're heading, and it appears it is, particularly because we don't have a plan, and it's so important that we develop a plan that gives us a chance to recognize all the different intangibles with this and gives us a roadmap for how to go forward in a way that guarantees that we will always have a healthy urban forest and canopy coverage. And I think what's missed here is that the trees that are selected here and the other red flowering eucalyptus have a very strong, economically viable downtown areas. They all pointed to canopy coverage, and someone brought up downtown San Luis Obispo being a good example, and our own downtown, which gives people the ability to feel coverage, to feel some shade, to see a little bit of a breakup of the hardscape. And I think we're going to be leaving some very barren sections of this town by removing these trees. And for me, I would just ask that we wait on this until we have the plan. I think that's a very intelligent way to go about it.
Well, I would go for a compromise here. What are you calling the forestry management plan? City forestry management plan?
The urban forestry management plan, yes.
Urban forest. So I'm going to move that we deny the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval for the trees mentioned in agenda item B1, and that we encourage staff to develop an urban forest management plan, and that before we approve, am I getting too convoluted here, more tree removals next year, that we have that in place.
Second.
Discussion.
Yes, sure. I believe we've already given direction to staff several months ago or last year, and that's what Mr. Woods was alluding to, is that they are already working on that. And, you know, I feel that I watched the Planning Commission meeting, and they you know, deliberated this and discussed, and I thought they did a good job, and I want to support their decision.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Well, the point of that part of the motion is to satisfy Mr. Smuckler that we've got an urban forest management plan in place before they come back next year with the next eight trees. So this is, and I'm supportive for that. I'm not supportive of stopping this process at this point. The Planning Commission's been through it. Now we've been through it tonight. We can see that we've got three votes, I believe.
let's be done with this, but let's satisfy you for next time. So
I just will say that I'm going to vote no on this. I'm appreciating that you hear me on the plan, and that I think is an important thing. I guess I just look at particularly some of these areas where there's clusters, what that change is going to look like and how barren it is going to be. I would suggest that we temper some of these clustered cuts so that we don't have such a drastic change, which is part of what an urban forest management plan will help us do, is phase this a little more softly.
I agree. It's going to be very startling when it happens. I'm not going to let you know how I am when trees come down. I don't like it either.
So is it possible to amend to perhaps reduce the cuts in those specific clusters so that we don't have such a drastic change?
Well, we've got a motion, but I'm not going there. So we've got a motion and a second. That would require removing that motion, and I'm not inclined to do that. So if there's no further discussion, I'm going to ask for all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 3-1. Gio here? Yeah.
It's different.
How would council feel about going to item B4 so we can get Gio on? Let me back up. Is there anybody here for the Cloisters or the North Point Assessment Districts? So there's nobody here for that. Okay, so we're going to do item B4 next. Ms. Luker.
Ms. Johnson coming back?
Oh, yeah, we need Nancy back.
Item.
You got to go to Gio's?
Yeah. Oh, and you have to. State that you're going to step down and why.
You have to tell why.
I don't even know why.
Item B4 is a request.
Hang on just a second. Oh, sorry.
Yes, I have. I have to step down from this item because I'm within 500 feet of the Giovanni project there. Reluctantly.
Thank you, George.
And item B4 is a request for a use permit to allow installation of a dock system and associated facilities at lease sites 105.1W, 105.2W, located at 1001 Front Street. And I will turn this over to Mr. Livick, the Public Services Director.
Who's going to turn it right over to Ms. Davis, the Assistant Planner on this, who's going to present the staff report.
Fast. Hello, Sierra. You got the ball.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. The project is located at 1001 Front Street and Waterlea Sites 105.1 and 105.2. The project consists of a new dock system, gangway landing, awning, and parking lot. The applicant has proposed to utilize an existing unpermitted parking lot on the adjacent lot right next to the fish market, restaurant, and clothing store. The parking lot was constructed and striped in 2000 without benefit of a permit, and therefore the parking lot was never reviewed pursuant to the municipal code. So right now they're making the parking lot legal. Acted on was they forwarded a favorable recommendation of the concept plan and to adopt the environmental document. It was heard at a regular scheduled public hearing on March 16th, 2011. At the meeting, the Planning Commission discussed the landscape requirement, dedicated sidewalk requirement, and parking lot requirements. The Planning Commission accepted the conditions of approval. However, they amended condition number 9 to require a maximum of a 3-foot high masonry wall with landscaping plan or a permanent fencing material consistent with the zoning ordinance. And they also required a landscaping plan submitted with a precise plan that covers a minimum of 5% landscaping, which is consistent with the municipal code. The Planning Commission forwarded a favorable recommendation to the City Council for the concept plan, and the project is before you tonight. So the project, as proposed with conditions, of approval as amended by the Planning Commission meet the objectives, regulations, and policies as set forth in general plan, zoning ordinance, and waterfront master plan. So that concludes my presentation.
Any question for Sierra before I give it to Kathy? Ms. Novak, you have the floor. She has 10 minutes.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and Council. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening to represent the applicant for the 1001 Front Street project. First, I'd like to thank staff for their time and efforts on this project. However, I must respectfully disagree with some of the conclusions in the staff report. For my presentation tonight, I'd like to provide a few brief comments on the general project details and then address the applicant's concerns for some of the project conditions and lastly, the parking credits. As staff has presented, the project has three components: the awning, the floating docks, and the parking lot. The awning as proposed will be a benefit to the public seating area because it will offer more protection from the elements during the inclement weather. The awning is designed in four sections so that portions can open and close depending upon the day. The impacts associated with the awning are minimal since there will be an open patio area left with the umbrellas and also an area for the public to continue walking along the bay side on the outside of the eating area. The second component of the project is the floating docks. As staff has noted, there is an additional approximately 74 linear feet to the main head float and installation of four finger-style slips and a new gangway, since the only access to the dock now is limited to the ladder from the wharf and a temporary use through the City Anchor Park gangway. A configuration change from the existing side tie method to the individual slips will provide a better tie-up system and protection for the boats. During bad weather, damage to the boats can occur just from the constant rubbing and banging into each other. All in all, the new docks and gangway will provide a needed improvement for boaters in this area. The last component of this project is the parking lot. With staff help, we have developed a new parking configuration that answers the city's concerns and is also acceptable to the applicant. You have a copy of this in your packet. Since the configuration appears acceptable, I'm not going to spend any more time on this part. Next, I would like to cover three project conditions that are of concern, and they are, number one, the planning condition number 8, which is the ADA space. The second one is planning commission number 9, which is the street frontage. And then engineering condition number 1, which is the public improvements. Staff is recommending relocation of the ADA space to the other side of the parking lot closest to the docks. At this time, staff and the applicant are unable to resolve the issue since both parties have consultants that differ in their opinion of the ADA standards. To resolve this issue now and allow the project to move forward, I would simply ask that the council modify the condition to state that this space shall meet state and federal standards and not designate a specific location. The second item is in regards to the landscaping and the street frontage. I would ask the council to remove this requirement for several reasons. First, there is a limited space for the installation of a planter box, a mature hedge, or a berm along the fence without jeopardizing the parking configuration that we've all worked so hard at fixing. Secondly, there is no water service to the area, so this would require trenching the parking lot to run the service. However, there may be some underground services such as electrical and the fuel tank infrastructure that could become problematic. Thirdly, the applicant has heard concerns about the hole in the fence and the area around the whale bones and the anchor. The applicant is willing to add some decorations around that area and repair the fence. I would ask that the council give the applicant the opportunity to think of some additional decorations that he could modify so that this requirement will happen when there's a comprehensive redevelopment of the site and not unclear timeline. The last item I'd like to cover this evening is the historical parking credits. As I mentioned, the proposed project will change the bow tie-up from side tie to finger slips. The change in this configuration has triggered the need for additional 7 parking spaces. Before I cover the parking space requirements, I'd like to take just a few moments to give you some information and history about the docks. As staff has noted, the most recent head float was approximately 60 feet in length. However, over the decades, the dock has varied in length and at one time was approximately 100 feet. The most recent reduction in the dock length was due to the damage from the sea lions crawling on that portion of the dock, which forced the applicant to remove that section of the dock. Unfortunately, we were not able to provide any photos that would substantiate this, and we were left with 60 feet of dock. This portion of the dock and the wharf over the years has side-tied up to 10 boats rafting together in 2 rows. You have in your packet a photo that shows 4 boats rafted together and 1 single boat tied at the dock. This afternoon, I found two more photos, which I've given to you this evening, I've also posted on the over here, that show numerous boats side-tied in that area. The project, as proposed, requires 9 parking spaces. In your report, staff has used the 60-foot dock as the basis for determining the historical parking credits, which yields 2 spaces, therefore leaving the applicant to provide 7 new spaces. Tonight, the applicant is requesting that the council grant additional historic parking credits to offset the proposed project. To support this request, I would ask the council consider the following. First, our LCP has policies supporting slips and boating facilities and is a high priority. Secondly, the zoning ordinance states that the parking space calculations are based on, quote, 1 space for each 35 linear feet of boat tie-down area. The problem here is that the interpretation of the tie-down area being only the 60-foot dock. The existing docks could handle up to 10 boats, and the new finger docks will have 6 boats. This does not appear to be a fair and equitable to require more parking spaces for less of an impact. I can understand staff's position that if a new dock were built, that they would only calculate the parking space on the actual dock space versus any potential side tie area. However, in this case, we are talking about historical uses and not a new project with no previous dock uses. Thirdly, the applicant's original project was 40-foot finger slips. Those finger docks you see are the ones stacked on the wharf now. The applicant modified his plan before submitting to the city to put 50-foot fingers in because he felt there was a real need to accommodate large boat tie-ups, and there's very limited space in this harbor for that. The reason why I'm mentioning this is that the original plan would accommodate 6 slips, and the new plan will accommodate 6 slips. The difference is the first project would have required a total of 7 parking spaces, and by adding the 10-foot to each finger, now the project requires 9 parking spaces. Furthermore, and traditionally, the parking impact for boaters is much less than a retail or restaurant use since the boaters may only come and go a few times a month as compared to hourly or daily use. In the end, the applicant is providing slips for larger boats that cannot be tied up in many locations in our harbor, and he's being penalized with additional parking spaces for the extra dock space. This is significant and could also be a deterrent for other projects along the waterfront to change from current side-tie docks to the finger-style docks, even though that the same number of boats could be berthed. Lastly, on this subject, I recognize that the council is faced with a potential precedence for this interpretation, so I'd like to take a minute and address that. The council could grant the credits to only documented historical side-tie use of more than 1 boat, and secondly, to limit the historical credits to only offset the parking requirements for boat slips and not buildings or any other uses. Since there are only a few places left that would qualify under this scenario, the council would not create a precedence that is unmanageable or open the door for other new uses. In conclusion of my presentation, I would ask the council to modify the project conditions based on the information that I have presented tonight. And for a quick review, that was Planning Commission number 8, which is the ADA space, Planning Commission number 9, which is the street frontage, Planning Commission number 11 is a landscape plan. If you do away with the landscape under number 9, you wouldn't need number 11. And then engineering condition number 1 for the deferment of the public improvements. And then also, lastly, that the council would grant the additional historic parking credits for the side tie use of for the previous floating docks to offset this dock project. That concludes my presentation. I have brought some extra copies of the conditions that I spoke to you about this evening. I can give some to staff, and I'd be also happy to answer any questions.
Good job, Kathy. What about some of these other conditions? I'll start with condition 4, liveaboards. This one bothered me. Are you okay with that?
We would prefer not to have this permit amended for a liveaboard. The city does have a liveaboard ordinance on place right now, and it's running back and forth and things like that. So it would be, this is a working area, so it's important that we allow the delivery trucks and other places to be able to temporarily occupy those parking spaces.
Okay. Before I ask Rob questions, does anybody have questions of Kathy, Carla, Nancy, Noah? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we... I don't know if it's you, Sue, or here, why the liveaboard requirements there. It seems to me we have a liveaboard process in town. And so what if somebody's living on a boat down there? That would be my other thing.
The
parking rate for liveaboards is different from just moored boats. It's basically double the parking requirement for liveaboards. So since they're not proposing liveaboards nor that they want to dedicate additional parking, that condition is there.
So if somebody came and wanted to apply for a liveaboard permit, they would have to come to you and he would have to come to you to get a parking space for that?
There would have to be sufficient parking for that liveaboard. Liveaboards are not proposed as a use on that site, so it is a use that would be regulated under our zoning code is to allow liveaboards.
Cool. And what about the parking agreement number, parking condition, planning condition number three, that if it's
There are two parcels of real property that could be sold separately there. Now, while you can't enter into an agreement with yourself, you can basically record a reservation that would, upon sale of that property, would require that agreement to be made.
So this wouldn't kick in until there was a sale. Is that what you're
saying?
It
would be a sale.
Or a lease.
Or a lease, yes.
So it's not really a requirement unless that would happen.
The condition could be revised to require them to record a reservation of an agreement. So you record a reservation against the property because you can't agree with yourself. Under the law, so you would record a reservation against that property so that it was when it is sold that would revert to that agreement. Might have that correct, right?
I'm not understanding.
Basically, what you don't want to happen is for the property, the docks and the spaces there need parking, and the parking is on real property. And what you wouldn't want to do is to have the applicant sell that real property and for the new owner to say, well, I'm not providing any parking for those docks. It's almost, if you want to call it the Martini situation that we had down at the other end, where you have a real property and a water lease on it, and if it's not encumbered and the real property changes hands, which it did in that instant, we had no more access. So it can be access issues we could be worried about or the parking. And that's the reason why you have it on there, is to make certain if the property is sold in the future, there's still that reservation of parking, or the new owner at least has knowledge it's there so he can't come into the city and say, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no agreement on the property.
Do you want to respond to this specifically? I mean, it's going to end up staying in.
Basically sounds like a legal issue, so...
I mean, I guess it doesn't kick in until it's, I mean, it's one day, hopefully not. Hopefully your kids are going to take on and, you know, it'll be third generation and it'll stay in your family forever. But you could one day sell it. And then Rob has explained it rather well, what would happen at that point. We can hear every word you're saying.
He said basically if you give the historical parking credits, then this is not going to be an issue because there won't be a park associated with the docks.
Do you want to respond to that?
Typically when we award historic parking credits, it's for permitted uses. And the side tying of boats would be different from the way we've granted historic parking credits.
Here's how I see this. The DeGaramores have been operating down there since the 60s, 70s, whatever, decades. We see the pictures. We've all remember when the boats, the big boats, the 60 to 80 footers, were rafted out 4 and 5 there. And the fish was coming across the dock and the fish processing was happening. And that was a dirt lot, and the trucks came and went. And, you know, today things have changed, and he's got the little restaurant thing going, and he's upgraded it, and now now we're sticking all this stuff on them. Then, I mean, we've got an historical in there that they cannot have it. And condition number six, at no time shall equipment, delivery trucks, or marine storage tanks, nor the like, be placed in the parking spaces. Well, you know, that's A, that's his parking lot. And B, since the 70s, they've been running delivery trucks and gas trucks and fish processing trucks in and out of that lot, and marine storage tanks, and the like. So I don't know why we're doing this to them. So I'm going to support the removal of those conditions plus the conditions that Kathy has asked for and grant them the historic parking credits and let them move on with it. I know they still have to go to Coastal Commission. They're going to get ground up there. And we need to make this as easy as we can on them. So that's where I'm at. Who wants to go next? You may.
Sure. I have some questions, actually. And these are for our staff. First, with the 8-foot parking requirements or sidewalk, excuse me. In your evaluation, do you see that this plan actually allows for the expansion of that parking lot without a major impact to the existing layout that we're about to approve or not?
I think the layout would have to be adjusted to accommodate that. We'd probably have to review the drive aisles, see if we can squeeze those drive aisles down a little bit more. The 8-foot sidewalk requirement comes out of our waterfront master plan. It's a typical requirement for all new development, redevelopment along the waterfront to provide that walkable space along there.
Okay, thank you.
Nobody answered that.
Yeah, you did. So we would need to do some restructuring. That might be a question, I guess, then for the applicant is what sort of impacts and costs would that have if granted that we do see the long-term vision being an 8-foot sidewalk there? How could we, is there a way we could plan this so that it allows for that without a major shakeup with this plan?
We can't get around the parking plan as presented tonight would require major changes if you want to put in an 8-foot sidewalk. I think what we were asking for was that in the future, if the site undergoes a major redevelopment, that's the appropriate time to look at the redevelopment and how to fit an 8-foot sidewalk in consideration with a redevelopment, not how do you take the parking lot today and then later on down the road just deal with the parking lot and try to put an 8-foot sidewalk in. I don't think we're going to get there without removing parking spaces.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay.
That was the intention behind the deferral, is to realize that it's not appropriate this time with this development. It'd be sometime down the road when either this site redevelops or when all of the rest of the Embarcadero has 8-foot sidewalk leading to it in each direction.
Okay. Along the lines of the ADA conflicts, are you comfortable with the state and federal requirements?
Staff agrees with that.
Okay. And with the fencing, it's been suggested to do a wooden fencing improvement along the chain link fence with peak holes. And as I understand it, that just is not compatible with our waterfront master plan. And that's one of the reasons why the wall, the 3-foot retaining wall or planter bed was part of the Planning Commission's recommendation.
Correct. I think the Planning Commission recognized that the chain link fence is not allowed nor appropriate per our waterfront master plan, and that the requirement for the berm or the 3-foot wall. Now, there may be other alternatives that we could look at. One would be the use of at-grade planters instead of building a wall or a landscape berm, have built planters along the back of sidewalk that would serve that same purpose of providing some site security and not blocking views.
Okay, thanks. I have some other questions, but I think, you know, seeing the direction this is going, I guess I find myself, in response to your comments, I think we're at a bit of a challenging place here because there has been a very historical and active use along the lines of fishing. And as we start to introduce more retail and restaurant to this area, we're obviously starting to come into conflict there. And I think that's the very reason that we want to make sure that there are some conditions, precise plan. And I think that could be done affordably. I think it would give us flexibility as we move forward into the long-term future about what happens in that space. And I guess I don't like to hear that we could be moving in a direction that might not allow for the 8-foot park or 8-foot sidewalks as well. I think that's a really important component of connecting the north and south ends of the Embarcadero. So I'm in favor of working with the Planning Commission's conditions and adjusting them to give some more flexibility to the applicant, but to remove them altogether, I think it's not good planning and it sets us up for conflicts in the future.
Okay, let me respond to this and I'll give it to you. To understand that philosophically, I'm against what's going on here. The man wants to put some docks in, and you're talking about succulents up in the sidewalk. That's the problem I have with the way the city operates. And I know it's not unique to Morro Bay, and I know it's in the regulations that we can do that. But philosophically, Gio wants to put in three-finger docks, four-finger docks. It's not going to be any more boats than what you're seeing up on the wall there. And we're requiring all this stuff, including what I see of the taking of private property, a three to four-foot strip of his parking lot, of his private property. You want to do the docks? Fine. Give us your property. Live with this restriction. And that's you know, it's a philosophical thing. It's not about individual stuff as much as it is that. And knowing the history of Morro Bay, and have, you know, knowing Gio since he was a teenager and working with his father. Now, his father had plans to build a building on that parking lot. I bet you Gio still got those renderings. And I think if you're going to build a new, brand new building there and you want a wider sidewalk, that's what Kathy's talking about. That would trigger that. That would trigger all kinds of stuff. He wants to put in four-finger docks. And that's where this is getting all convoluted. And that's the problem, and it's the philosophical one that I'm having here.
Just a quick response to that. I don't really see it as philosophical. I think it's pretty clear in the municipal code and with our waterfront master plan that we have a very specific vision about how we want to see this develop. And as far as I understand, we're supposed to follow that. And I think the concept of a planter bed is actually providing flexibility and is very affordable, but it allows us to give him that flexibility and also follow what's within the codes and the rules of what we're trying to do for that vision. So I'm thinking, how do we respect his interest in improving the property and providing a really important service and facility for the waterfront, but also respect those codes that we're required to follow? So that's the difference I think we have.
Got it. Carla.
Thank you, Mayor Yates and Councilmember Smuckler. I appreciate both the comments. And I just at this time would like to, excuse me, ex parte, that I did meet with the applicant's representative at the lease site. And I'm not sure if anybody else did, but just for the record. I'm good with some of them, and I'm not good with removal of others. I spoke with the applicant about condition number four with the liveaboard, and as much as I didn't understand why it was there, now that I do, I'm not necessarily real supportive of removing it. It does change the dynamics of the parking, and I don't want to make exceptions to the rules that would be asked of us for other. We set a precedent with some of those things. I agree with you. I'm not here to make sure that Gio puts planter boxes in. I'm not looking to go that far. But I don't want to remove some of the conditions that would help in the parking management of the Embarcadero. I hope we have a parking problem there someday. That would be a good problem. I'm good with them just doing some on-site improvements to the existing landscape area and things. I had Ms. Novak show me some areas that they could do some things with so that it doesn't take away precious parking area. I'm good with the condition of a comprehensive redevelopment site at the time you address the extension of the sidewalks and to include it that way, and the removal of the other conditions. I'm, you know, with number 8, number 9, number 11, I'm fine with those things. I would like number 6 rather than to remove it, where you had said it, at no time shall equipment, delivery trucks, marine service tanks, nor the likes be placed in the parking places. I would prefer rather than remove it, it says permanently placed. I think that it would just mean that you can park there, but you can't come leave this here for a storage area. I would be concerned that some of the parking, anywhere you are, where I am, anything becomes a permanent storage place, and it still allows.
Sold.
Thank you. Other than that, I'm going to stop there because I'm pretty good with most of the other things. I guess I would probably want to come back to the...
And planting and succulents down there. I think if you were to take that little area where he has the whalebone and the anchor and those, what are those things called, pilings, and clean it up and maybe put a little sign on there that says this is an antique whalebone from the ancient times, blah, blah. I think that's going to take care of it. I mean, that's what it's for. It's a fishing place. And as much as I like gardens, I don't think we need one there. I agree that the 8-foot sidewalk comes with site improvements, sale of the property, or whichever happens first. They build a new building, then they tear the fence down. In terms of the fence, I remember talking about this chain link fence when the other project came up at Planning Commission, the stacks. I don't have a problem with it. It's there. It's historic. I think one of the things we talked about down there that would help make it look good would be to do like he's done on the corner there and put wood in front of the chain link. And one of the problems with that is, oh, but it's going to block the view. But when you look at the size of those gates, which I understand are kept open until 10 o'clock at night, you have a really good clear view through there, I think. So I don't think it's going to interrupt your view corridor, and it would make it look better. In response to Mr. Smuckler's talk about the waterfront master plan, I think that kicks in with major new development. When that site changes, then they have to come in, they have to be part of the waterfront master plan. But I don't think so right now. So I'm pretty good with most of it. I do not understand completely the historic parking credit, so please educate me.
I'm going to have somebody else educate us.
And thank you.
Who's going to do that?
Somebody.
Rob, or Sierra? Sierra...
Okay, so for the historic parking credit, how historic parking credits are granted is they're granted through uses that were historically used on site. They're granted to the applicant per the zoning ordinance. So if you have, like, for example, if you have a commercial use and you don't have enough parking on site, it's 1 per 300 for a commercial space. If you don't have enough parking, we're going to credit you that because there was historically commercial there. In this case, how it's used on the waterfront is docks are parked at 1 per 35 linear feet of dock. That's how they've always been parked. We did do some research into the historic zoning ordinances. They've always been parked that way. At no time on any water lease site for head floats would we require an applicant to provide parking for side tying. That would be a substantial amount of parking if you take the length of the boats and you take it at 35 linear feet if you're considering that tie down area. That's a substantial amount of parking on the Embarcadero that we just don't have. That's why it's never parked that way. So in this case, we would never look at the site and say, historically there were 10 boats, assuming they were 35 or less, and give historic parking credit for 10 spaces. So historically it was 60 linear feet for the dock of what we can find in records. So we would grant 2 parking spaces to the applicant and not 10. Does that clarify any?
Yeah, I take exception to the 60 feet because I've seen a lot of 80-footers down there.
60 feet for this specific site.
Okay.
So we give them 2 parking spaces credit. So they do have that. 9 spaces are required for the project. We credited the applicant 2 parking spaces, so 7 are required. And this is because they're adding more linear feet of dock that was never on the site before. So that's
and where does this where does this argument come in? Is it just
it's from the municipal code?
I mean, it may be linear feet, but we're there's not going to be any more boats because the old way, the T pier way, is to raft them out, which is as we see up in the wall, is to that was commonly done down there.
So in the past, with the pictures that the applicant provided, substantial amount of parking would have been required if we said that for each boat we required 1 parking spot. It wasn't calculated that way, so in the past we would have required 2 parking spaces. We wouldn't have required 10 as the applicant is requesting. So historically they would have gotten 2, they wouldn't have gotten 10 as a required parking that they would have to provide. So we would only grant 2 at this time for historical credit. Because if we did it when the docks were placed in, we would have said you have
that right now this new slip configuration, he can put in 6 boats. And the other way that used to be down there would had a lot more than 6 boats, so the impact is less. So we're just asking for to offset this new project with what historically was done down there, call it even. There's no more parking that he's going to have to provide for this new configuration, just changing from a side tie to a finger dock is creating this problem.
Thank you, I think.
I have a question about the side tie. As far as I understand, a side tie is not considered a permanent parking.
It's not?
As far as I understand it, what we're transitioning to is going to be utilized for permanent parking, and that's why we're not granting the historic parking, or it's not suggested that we do.
I don't follow that side tie is not permanent and the finger docks are permanent. It's
there's not a distinguished line between the two of them?
I don't know. Is there? I mean, something about side ties specifically?
The zoning code does not deal with side ties. I guess what our concern is does this set a precedent so when somebody has a head float and they have the ability to side tie 5 boats together, should we be requiring additional parking because they can side tie in the future? Or does this not create a precedent by that? Maybe Rob can help us with that question.
That's a good one. You can talk to him about that tomorrow.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
The additional required parking being requested fits within the existing parking lot that's there. It's just restructuring it. Isn't that correct? Is that my understanding?
All of the parking fits within the existing parking lot, so they're not having to buy parking.
Just have to reallocate how it's done?
Just reallocate how it's done. It takes away those 7 spaces. It basically assigns them to that use so that they're not available for some future use.
Oh, okay. So somebody could come in that's using one of the other businesses there and park in the spot. You're saying in the long term it's dedicating it to the use of the docks, not to a new use of the property?
Not to, let's say, there was some redevelopment and it required additional parking spaces down there.
Okay,
so when you have redevelopment, the whole thing comes back and we start all over again with sidewalks and parking places and all kinds of things. But it sounds to me like there are plenty of parking places on that lot right now. Isn't that what you're saying?
Correct. There's sufficient
parking. Okay, they have sufficient parking. So, I'm sorry, what's the problem? Whether it's historic or not historic, it's there.
It encumbers the parking.
So the future.
So if council grants a historic parking credit and takes away the encumberment of those 7 spaces, they can be used for for other uses that could be added to the site.
Okay.
That's really the only issue.
So to encumber those seven spaces, do we just ask them to put a sign on here, on each one?
No, there's no signage required that dedicates them. Let's say there's 20 spaces there.
Right.
Existing spaces.
Thank you for your patience.
If seven were to become encumbered, that would allow 13
spaces
that are unencumbered spaces that could be used for additional development, for a shared parking agreement. Let's say somebody near the site redeveloped and needed to add additional parking. You could enter into a shared parking agreement and use those spaces for that also.
If you say so, thank you.
And they just want to keep their options open and not encumber the
That's
parking
correct.
Spaces. Yes, please. You can do whatever you want, Carl. No. Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Just a quick clarification. I beg to differ with staff as far as the parking. Condition number six says parking space labels. The parking spaces reserved for the docks shall be labeled and open to available for people using the docks. So the way that condition number six is showing that you're going to have a label on those parking spaces, those seven spaces in the parking lot, they will be reserved for the boat docks. So it's not open to the general public, and so I would say that that's not absolutely correct with this condition left in there. Thank you.
I don't know why they'd have to be labeled. I missed that one because I was focused on the next sentence.
But the parking space label is not the same issue as the parking historic credits.
No, and the parking space label is because they have the parking spaces labeled on their submitted site plan.
It's a quarter to ten. We have still a lot to cover that needs to be addressed tonight, and I'm going to ask for council support to put off the visitor center item tonight, and we'll bring it back hopefully next time. If not, it'd be the time after that, but as soon as we can. And so we can get through the rest of the agenda. Are you okay with that?
I would support that and apologize to those who have been waiting for it.
We're sorry.
Very sorry. Sorry.
Are you okay with that?
I am. I guess I'd ask, are there any things specifically we can help initiate in the short term to keep the ball somewhat rolling?
I talked to Craig. He said he's okay with this. If once we start down the path, we're going to get bogged down. We're in the middle of another item now. We need to make this decision to punt it or not.
Perhaps we could have it be our B1 at our next hearing so we could hear it first.
Well, I'm not going to guarantee the next meeting because we've got medical marijuana next meeting, and we have another big agenda next, but within the next two meetings, and we'll put it at the top and make sure they don't sit here all night.
And maybe they'll resolve all the issues and come forward with just a brilliant idea that just...
Won't be so. Okay. So I have consensus, and we're going to do that. Craig and Chris and Susan and Joan, we are putting off the visitor center.
And Janice.
Sorry, Janice.
We apologize.
So sorry about that.
It's going to get too late.
Stay too late.
Agenda.
Okay. We're gonna resume with Gio's project. This is a public hearing, and does anybody want to address us on this? Seeing none, I will bring it back. Took care of that, Jamie. You're welcome. I think I'm close to it. How are we on the historic parking?
For me, that was all we were down to. I know that Mr. Smuckler had some other concerns, but I know for me, I'm just down to where we're at with that.
And I'm give it to him myself.
I can't do the whole thing. I just feel that it might. I'm back to us again with the waterfront master plan. My concern, and I love Gio, and I'm happy with what he's done there. I think it's beautiful. And the last thing I want to do is hamper anybody's business opportunities. Really, I just am concerned for the future of what that establishes in giving those historic parking credits. Down the road when somebody wants to come do something different with the site and we have non-existent spaces there and then we're challenged to keep adding more to that specific area without having sufficient parking in that I would be willing. I believe, you know, I'm sure that, you know, the representative of the applicant is truthful in that the docks were 100 feet, and I have no problem with giving the extension of that other credit and a consideration for the fact that it was required to have two more with the change. So I would be, you know, for me, I'm saying, you know, because they changed the length of the slips, to me doesn't change the value of the parking. So I don't think that it was fair to add two more spots required. And I would certainly be willing to give the other extra spot for what the dock was.
So are you saying nine spaces are, correct me if I'm, nine spaces are required, you're crediting two. Are you suggesting we credit two additional?
I'm suggesting we credit three additional.
Three additional, five. Well, five total,
right,
out of nine.
The two, that three from the dock, and two from what was required for the change of length of the docks. Yes, five total.
I'm
so
good
it would
with
be
that.
Four
as a compromise.
Oh, left.
Four left.
Four left.
That's where we're at. I mean, I see this is what's coming.
I like
being
it.
Being fair of future uses encumbered on there.
Over here.
Speaking specifically to that, I still have hopes that we would go with the majority of what the Planning Commission forwarded to us unanimously. I know if George was here, he'd back me up on it, but he's not, so you guys go.
Well, it's easy to speak for George then, isn't it? All right, I'm going to form a motion then, if that's okay, and this is where I'm going to go with the parking credits, which you just heard. So it's kind of a split the baby thing, if you're good with that. Okay, I will move that we approve conditional use permit UPO-284 and the adoption of the mitigated negative deck for the construction of the new dock, gangway, landing, awning, etc. And that, additionally, we... You're not going to go along with liveaboards. Okay. We remove on condition 6... The first sentence, the parking spaces reserved for the docks shall be labeled and open and available for people using the docks. That is removed. And the second sentence, we're going to add the word permanently in this manner. At no time shall equipment, delivery trucks, or marine storage tanks, nor the like, be permanently placed in the parking spaces.
Site.
Yes. That's correct. That was the request of the applicant. And I would agree that was how the applicant had, its agent had requested that it read at comprehensive redevelopment of the site.
Well, are you suggesting a rewording of this or leaving it in?
Well, you had suggested in your motion to remove it, and her suggestion was to change the verbiage. Ms. Novak's suggestion was to change the verbiage to at which time there's a comprehensive redevelopment of the site. That's right. Right? Is that what it was?
Kathy?
Isn't that what it was? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to amend my motion, hoping that you'll support me, that we add the words, that I'll state them for the motion, at which time, this is on engineering conditions number one, add the words, at which time there is a comprehensive...
Redevelopment
of the site. Thank you, Carla.
That's her words.
It is getting late. Okay.
Second stand.
Okay. Any discussion over here? Noah. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 3-1. You're there. Good luck with the Coastal Commission. I wish it was over for you. All right, should we knock out B1 and B2? Get it done, B1. B2, Ms. Luker.
Thank you. Item B2 is resolution number 28-11, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Park and Open Space Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. Mr. Woods, Recreation and Parks Director.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This evening, the staff is recommending City Council adopt Resolution 2811, which initiates the proceedings to levy an annual assessment to the Cloisters Park and Open Space. The Cloisters Park and Open Space Assessment District was formed in 1996, and the cities began the maintenance of the parkland and open space in 1999. Each year, the City Council must hold a series of three public hearings to confirm the levy of the assessment for the upcoming year, fiscal year, pardon me. Tonight's the first of those three. Upon adoption of Resolution 2811, the second public hearing to review the engineer's report and to notice the intent to levy the assessment is scheduled for your consideration on May the 10th, 2011, at your regular meeting.
Thank you,
and this concludes my report. Be happy to answer any questions at this time.
That was a good, succinct report. Thank you very much. Any questions for Joe? This is a public hearing. If any member of the public would like to address council, it's the appropriate time. Seeing none, I will return it to council and entertain a motion approving resolution number 28-11.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. B3, Ms. Luker.
Resolution 29-11, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. Once again, Mr. Woods.
Mr. Mayor and Council, staff is recommending Council adopt Resolution 2911, which initiates the proceedings to levy the annual assessment on the North Point Natural Area. North Point Natural Area was formed in 1996, and the city began the maintenance of the natural area in 1997. Each year, the City Council must hold a series of three public workshops, to confirm the levy of the assessment for the upcoming fiscal year. This is the first of those three. Upon your adoption of 2911, the second public hearing to review the engineer's report and to notice the intent to levy the assessment on the is scheduled for your consideration on, again, May the 10th, 2011, at your regular meeting. And this concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the North Point Natural Area at this time.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions for Joe? Seeing none, we'll open it to the public. Any member of the public like to address council? This would be the appropriate time. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. Any further discussion? Go ahead.
Move approval.
Second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Let's go to D1. D1. D is in.
That's mine, and I'm getting there. I just need to find it. Bear with me. Oh, got it. Thank you once again. Good evening, Council. Tonight we're asking you to, for the third year in a row, approve a service incentive retirement program for fiscal year 2011-2012. In recent years, cities have structured retirement incentives as a means of short-term and long-term savings, and there's a number of ways to structure these. We have considered those. End of May, how many employees have agreed to this this retirement incentive?
Thank you, Andrea. Questions? Go ahead.
Yes, please. I can't remember. Ms. Luker, can you please tell me, does this go towards their PERS, or is it just strictly a payout?
It's just a payout. It is not considered compensation by PERS.
So it doesn't factor into their retirement?
You are correct. It does not.
Nancy? George? Noah? Okay, then can we, a motion approving.
Move approval of service retirement incentive for fiscal year 2011-12 is presented.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, make your statement, George, and I'm going to ask you to go again.
I guess I'm leaving the room again.
Yes.
Because I'm, this has something to do with my sister, so I'm out of here.
This has something to do with his sister. This is the outrigger. Lisa and George's sister owns the outrigger, so he's stepping down for that reason. D2, Ms. Luker.
Thank you. This is a resolution to approve Amendment Number 6 to the lease agreement for lease site 87W, 88W, the Outrigger restaurant located at 833 Embarcadero. I will turn this over to Sue Lichtenbaum, the Harbor Business Manager, for presentation.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
We would recommend that you adopt Resolution 2711, approving Amendment Number 6 to the lease agreement for 8788, 87W88W, Outrigger Restaurant, located at 833 Embarcadero. As a summary, the proposed amendment extends the term of the lease agreement for the lease from December 31st, 2001, which is the current termination date, through March 31st, 2018, makes a notification change in the notification process. It will add a 10% penalty for past due rent payment. It reduces percentage of gross sales on bar cocktail lounge from 10 to 5% and includes a schedule of required repairs and improvements to the site. Violet League is the existing tenant on the site. In 2007, the city requested proposals for potential future developers on this lease site. They received three proposals, and one was from Ms. League, and there were two from the partnership of Caldwell and Redican. And Caldwell and Redican were approved for the proposal of a conference center on the site, and their plan was to take the existing site that Mr. Caldwell is the lessee on, 8686W, combine it with 8788, and put in a conference center. They did obtain concept-level approval of those redevelopment plans and started work on the Coastal Commission permitting process. During this permit, the partnership dissolved, and Burt Caldwell remained as the sole owner of 801 Embarcadero and continued with the proposal and with getting the permits and with lease negotiations with the city for a new lease for his redevelopment project. The city has been working with Mr. Caldwell throughout these years to try to come to a lease agreement for the proposal. Unfortunately, Mr. Caldwell did not provide documentation on proposed cost estimates or an economic analysis that the city had requested for purposes of continuing with lease negotiations. These issues were reviewed by council at closed session on March 8th, closed session, and on March 10th, Mr. Caldwell was notified that due to failure to adequately respond to the city's request, the city determined to terminate further negotiations on the combined conference center project for 801 through 833 Embarcadero. Mr. Caldwell does still retain his interest in the lease agreement on 8686W at 801 Embarcadero, and that lease expires March 31st, 2018. At the same closed session meeting, March 8th, council directed staff to discuss an amendment to extend the term of the lease agreement for lease site 8788, located at 833 Embarcadero, with the existing tenant by League. We did meet with Ms. League, and we are proposing the amendment, which appears in your packet, and it does several things. There's a repair and improvement schedule, and Ms. League is proposing on putting in $40,000 to $50,000 with improvements on the site. These would be starting in May of this year and going through May of 2013. She would be held to these dates, or there would be a default on the lease. It also extends the term of the lease until March 31st, 2018. That way, both lease sites terminate at the same time, and we see a drop in revenue of maybe $2,000 in percent growth. So not a big impact, but a small impact. The other change in the lease is the notification system, which right now, anytime we do notifications on the lease, we have to do it by personal, certified, or registered mail, and that would be changed to require personal or first-class mail, which, again, is consistent with the master lease format. So in conclusion, we would recommend adoption of the resolution to approve Amendment Number 6. And if you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Can you tell us how Mrs. League feels about the new condition? Is she on board?
She signed the lease agreement. Okay. Ms. Novak's not here, but she's her representative, and I did get an email from her saying that she was fine with it, and she did sign the agreement.
Okay. Questions? Start with you, Noah. Over here.
Yes, please. just a couple. The
previous required leasehold improvements, the ADA requirements and things that were placed there, have they been achieved?
I don't think they have been. I would have to double check on that.
Because that was several years ago, and so I don't see that listed in here then, too. I'm just
was
concerned.
That required on her side or the other side?
It was required on the restaurant site.
But if you recall, what transpired is they were going to do those improvements.
With
and
the remodel.
With the remodel, which gave them from 2010 to 2018. And when we took away those 8 years, she agreed to that amendment to remove it back to 2010. Those requirements for those ADA improvements went away. So now she's, for the new extension to 2018, it's different, different items that she's presented that she's willing to do.
So we're not requiring compliance with ADA on the lease site then anymore?
No.
Well, how do we not do that? How did we require it before and we're not now?
Well, that was part of a major project that was going to even put, was there an upstairs, rentals,
upstairs.
And it was a quite extensive project.
I think that was going to be when they were going to redevelop the entire site. Her original plan was to redevelop the downstairs restaurant and put in a small number of hotel units on the upstairs. So I think the ADA was going to kick in upon redevelopment of the site.
I guess I was referring to, like, in the restaurant and things, the bathrooms. I wasn't looking at mm-hmm. the extensive, but I'm not sure. Maybe Ms. Novak knows then. Has the ADA compliancy of the restaurant been done ever?
You know, I apologize. I don't know about the restaurant. I didn't think about that, or else I would have been prepared in advance. Okay. Sorry.
You good?
No, not really. I mean, I just feel like we had something that was conditioned to the site, and I'm not looking to try and create a financial difficulty on the lease site by any means. You know, I would just want to say, and I've been supportive of Ms. Leek having this site all along, is that the repairs and improvements, I appreciate the upgrades to it, but I know my landlord doesn't value leasehold improvements to when I paint the building or refinish my tables. Those are personal improvements that are of value to their business, not a leasehold improvement. I appreciate them being recognized in there, but I don't see those, just for clarification, as lease site improvements. I'm supportive of the lease and the changes and things, but I just would want to know at some point how that ADA is, that this mandated is on all the city lease site is being handled.
It's already a condition, is it not, that she has to fulfill?
Well, it's not mandated. ADA compliant is required when there's a major project that was done, and that's why it was required with the last one. These are just improvements, kind of like we've approved for Harbor Hut. Now, granted, you have control over which improvements you'd like to see. We based this extension kind of on the same one that was done for other ones, and for the amount of time, it was in the $50,000 to $75,000 range. But you certainly could require those amount of investment, I think is what you're saying. There's a better place to put it than where they want to put it. And you certainly can do that. But we don't have any, that I know, mandate to require any of the leaseholds to go to ADA upgrades until they do their master project, until it comes in front of you then.
So how did we require the Harbor Hut just did it then? So I'm confused if you're comparing it to the upgrades they did.
That wasn't through us.
Oh, they just did it on their own accord.
They had to do $75,000 worth of improvements, and they decided to use the $75,000 for that improvement.
Okay, and so on this site, we're requiring $40,000.
We did allow that type of improvement for Harbor Hut as well. I mean, they did some structural improvements as well, but they did get credit also for painting and upgrading their interior decorative aspects as well. They did other things besides that, as our Ms. League is also proposing to fix some of the signage, replace a roof sign, refinish the outdoor patio deck, which I think would be a benefit to the site, to repair or replace the sidewalk by the entry area, and repair the catwalk around the bayside of the building and to renovate the entry facade and courtyard, which I think you could argue that both ways. It's a benefit to the business, but it's also a benefit to the community. So we could change this language slightly and resubmit it to Ms. League if she's amenable to that, to put something more substantive in if the council so desires. But like I say, definitely on the Harbor Hut and some of others, we have not specified that it couldn't be somewhat cosmetic in terms of the improvements to the site when we've given extensions like this.
I'm going to submit that Violet's agreed to this, and this is what staff's worked out with her, and that if we change it around now, it's you know, I'm not in favor of it, especially in light of what Sue has just said, and it's consistent with other leases. So I'm good with the resolution and amendment.
I guess my question would, I'm back to that, you know, that I guess I didn't pay enough attention when we did the Harbor Hut lease and redid that we included. I totally agree that there's a value to doing the deck work and all those things to the lease site and to the business, but I must have missed it. I must have been asleep when we were talking about, you know, signage that is their own signage and table refinish and decorative things that are of value to the business. I didn't pay attention. And I'm not trying to create a hardship for this. I would just rather see that value of the $40,000 to $50,000 value be to lease site improvements, and you know, maybe it makes a future agenda item.
And I think potentially the reason there's some confusion is when we did do the Harbor Hut, I think in the specifics of the amendment, it just said tenant shall complete repairs and improvements to the site valued at a minimum of X dollars by such and such a date, and it didn't specify what those improvements were going to be. He had prepared a list of some of his proposed improvements, and then at the end of that time, he did provide us with the documentation of what he did do.
Yeah, I guess from a staff standpoint, we do a dollar figure and we leave that up to the tenant on what improvements they believe are going to benefit the leasehold the best to bring a better return to their business. And that's the way we've kind of handled it. We haven't quite dictated in previous amendments where they're going to spend that, but that doesn't mean you can't do that as a council.
I guess I see.
Would you like to talk?
Yes.
No.
With the table refinishing, it seems like you're crossing a line there where it could become buying new telephones or computers for the business. I'm not sure how we could make sure we avoid that sort of a scenario. And like Ms. Borchardt's saying, focus this on the lease site improvements. There seems to be a pretty significant line that's crossed when we talk about table refinishing.
So could...
Nancy.
Thank you. Could we just possibly mark that out as an option, interior painting and table refinishing, and approve it with that change?
You could, but I'm going to submit, like was just said, that when they paint, they improve their restaurant, it brings more customers in, it generates more sales tax, and I'm not in favor, personally, of changing this deal now that staff has worked out with Violet and that Violet has put her name to. It forces them to go back and say, all right, council's made some changes here, and then, you know, they've negotiated a deal here. If you want to, for this down the road, you know, bring this item back, that how we want to dictate how money is spent, I'm all for that. But you've got precedent here. You've got precedent with her and her own family. And she's going to come right back and say, well, you did this for Harbor Hut, and you know, why are you changing the rules on me here? So I just, you know, let's approve this, and if you want to, you know, tweak it for the future, I'm okay with that.
Well, I would say because we just reduced the requirement by 5% and have deficited the value of the revenue from the lease site in hopes that it'll be offset by the improvements, and I guess I would just rather have it not necessarily list some of the... I will concede and support D2 with the request that we bring back on a future agenda item, which I know is not part of the motion, that for discussion right now before the motion, that we address this for future projects.
We will take that as a declaration of a future agenda item out of order. You got that right, Andrea? That is done.
Thank you. Move and approval of D3.
Resolution 27-11?
Yes. D2.
Second goes to Noah. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Let's get George. Let's take 5 minutes. I know it's late. I need 5 minutes. So 5 minutes and we're back. We're back.
McDonald's still open.
D4. McDonald's closes at 11. 35 minutes. Okay, you want me to handle this? Okay, I've got it. I think everybody knows what's going on here. Stan Trapp and his merry group of Embarcadero business owners want to put banners on the waterfront. PG&E started the painting of the light poles today, and they look just great. They're very black, the new paint job. They do look fresh. George was thrilled that they were down there taking up some of his parking spaces, but you'll get past it.
I'll step down.
Oh, again.
Yeah, I mean, there was parking space. He's got light poles in his parking lot.
Yeah, but they didn't finish painting them.
Yes, they're going to get to it. He told me by May 1st they would be done. So this group has designed. They've got the brackets. I've got a sample of the bracket. They're very heavy duty. They look like they would last forever and ever and ever. I've got them in the trunk of my car. I don't think you want me to haul them in here. They're brackets.
No, not tonight.
Thank you. And I have banner samples. I didn't think you'd want to see those either. They have researched this extensively on what's the longest lasting, et cetera. I'm asking for $25,000 up to, not to exceed. And that doesn't mean that because if you approve $25,000 that we're going to spend the $25,000, we're going to get the brackets, the installation, and four sets of banners. And if we can do that for 20, the brackets, the banners are around 16, then we've got to install them, get a contractor to install them. So I'm hoping to come in 19-ish. But I'm asking for up to 25 just to contingency. I think everything is laid out in the report. I think the $25 will be well spent. It's the centerpiece of the whole Embarcadero spruce up, and the whole idea is that people come here this summer and they go down there, and with everything that we've done, all the sprucing up and the banners and the new flagpole that Joe's getting for the top of Centennial Stairway, that people come and they come down to the waterfront and they go, whoa, something really cool is happening here, and they take that message home, and tourism improves. And if we can get the motel rate up 1%, boom, the $25,000 is paid back. That doesn't necessarily go to Harbor, however.
Yeah, good as
that. We take from Harbor and we give to the city. So that's it. Ask me questions. Who wants to start? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to hear your thoughts on how to justify this compared to the really necessary infrastructure needs that we have on the waterfront at the same time, much larger than the 40,000 that we have. But, you know, at the same time, it's hard to say, well, let's designate this money there, knowing that we have basic infrastructure needs on our piers and so on.
Well, we have $1 million, over $1 million, or around $1 million, I'll say around $1 million, correct? Okay, I stand corrected. 900,000 plus the 40,000, less the 25 if that gets approved. For infrastructure, Sue has told me the number one priority is getting after the North T Pier this year. The 25,000, as somebody pointed out during public comment, is 0.2% of our reserves. If, you know, it's all part of the grander scheme of bringing more people here. That includes the Maritime Museum, that static. Good job, Evan. Making an impact down there. It's all about an impact. And it's a spit in the drop in the bucket. You good?
Yeah, you answered my question.
Okay. Good, and no more questions? George? Nancy?
Yes, I have questions. I'll leave the piggy one to my friend, Councilmember.
Oh, nice of you.
Well,
to be the villain.
I don't want to steal her question, but I do have another one. That's her concern. I mean, I'm concerned. She had anyway. You talk about two different size banners. A 6-foot banner seems awfully big.
Well, this is for
and why?
Okay, the short banners, the 2x4s, are on the black street poles, and we'll go from the Embarcadero Inn to Beach Street. From Beach Street to about Verges, you've got the black street poles.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. To about the intake building.
Yeah, to the yeah.
The short black street poles in the parking lot, but in the median you have those tall ones, and so the idea with the tall banners, they would be doubles. They're all singles on the waterfront, facing into the sidewalk. They would be over the sidewalk. We can't put them over the street because the street poles are too low, and even with 4-footers, they'd get taken out by trucks. But down from Beach Street to the intake building, we would go, there's only 8 of them, we would go in those tall ones in the medians. They have 2 lights, and they would have 2 banners, one on each side.
You think that would be extremely effective down that way?
Yeah.
If you
I
say
particularly
so.
Like those, because okay. They're doubles and they're longer.
6 feet seems big to me, but
well, they're
we'll
very
see.
They're very tall light posts.
I know that. I was down there looking at them.
I'm glad
measuring them. You don't think I? All right, moving on. It's Carla's turn for questions.
Okay, so thank you for clarification on that. We had walked down there and looked at that. So you're proposing then that there would be on the left side and the right side for that section, and they would be doubles on the right. I'm just trying to understand. So they'd be
from
doubles
the Embarcadero into Beach Street. They would be one-sided.
Right on
over the sidewalk.
Right.
Short, 4 feet, 2 feet by 4 feet. Okay. From Beach Street to the intake building, on 8 poles.
On the right side.
No, right in the middle of the street.
Oh, okay.
In the median.
In the median. Okay.
Are the tall light posts? They would be doubles.
And then in the parking lot there?
No.
Okay, nothing there. Just that section there. Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay, so you're not I'm sorry. So you're not doing, like, in front of Harbor Head or those black poles down there?
Not those black poles, okay. No. It didn't, you know, Stan Trapp and I.
You're changing the pattern.
We are.
No, that's what we're just trying to understand.
But
okay,
it's Beach Street is a natural stopping point. The banners in the parking lot just don't make sense.
No.
But they really make an impact on the tall ones.
Makes better sense now. Thank you.
That answers my question. I have 2 comments. One, as the liaison for the Harbor Board, this has been brought up a couple times, so I just want to comment to that. As I received 2 emails from 2 of the Harbor Commissioners, and one also was here this evening, and they expressed a concern again, that, you know, has been alluded to, that there's tremendous infrastructure needs down there. And they did a prioritization the other night of what can possibly be done. I responded to their concerns with the fact that this money is not from the accumulation fund, for just to verify that, as they did not have clarification on that. It is not from the accumulation fund. It is reserve money that was left over from not replacing Mr. Algert that was not reallocated.
Unallocated funds.
Right.
Yeah.
Not accumulation funds that were specifically intended towards the infrastructure repairs, which we all know, and I appreciate their feeling was that that was still a priority. My comment in response to that then that I would share was that the waterfront leaseholders are the primary resource of funding for that harbor fund. And so to allocate $25,000 to do beautification projects seems extremely fair to the waterfront leaseholders for what their huge contribution is, how our harbor fund exists. So as much as the infrastructure repairs are a priority, spending $25,000 of their money that they've contributed from their lease sites is minimal, I think, for what we get in return. That being said, that pig thing is, I hate to put lipstick on a pig by making it beautiful up top and not addressing the visual blight on the ground. And so I would hope that if we're going to add more signs, which banners are, that we would move forward in addressing the signage on the waterfront, on even if we...
Sheet? Sign ordinance?
Yes, it is.
That's on the Planning Commission's
plate. Planning Commission
heard it.
Heard it, making modifications to it to bring it back to council.
Yeah.
Is it coming? I mean, are they finished with it?
They are finished with it.
All right, then let's get that. We'll get that here in the next three meetings.
Yeah, I just would like to, if we're going to add some beautification, I'd like to address
that.
I'm
with you.
Like.
You're not going to have
Thank
a lot of objection on that. Did you have
Thank
something,
you.
George?
No, excuse me. I agree with Carla on this one because I only call it a little different. I call it pouring perfume on a pig, but same thing. I think this is going to be a morale booster. That we're, you know, it's just going to make everybody feel good, and for the whole town. I really think this is going to be great.
Okay.
And we will, I hope, do that sign thing like Carla's talking about.
Yeah, and I don't know that we can address that for this summer, unfortunately. Can we? I mean, this is going to have to go through public hearings. It's a zoning law deal, right? Zoning ordinance?
Yes, it'll end up, once it goes to City Council, it'll be forwarded up to Coastal Commission for one of our amendments to our zoning code. So it's, even after you hear it, it's probably a ways off before Coastal approves it.
Like end of the year at the earliest.
Probably.
I mean, we're looking at summer of 12 before we can fix this.
May I? Just for clarification, there currently is a ban still in effect on them. So we've ignored it. They are banned in our present state as it exists right now. Is that correct?
Under our current sign ordinance, A-frame signs are prohibited. What we did in about 96, 97 is allowed for exceptions to be granted to that if you obtained an exception permit, which we have not gotten. That's been kind of what's been on hold till we get this done. So my suggestion is when we bring it back for the sign ordinance, you can address that issue of whether you want to enforce the ban on A-frame signs until it's gone through. But that would ban it citywide.
I'll declare that at... here in a minute. That could solve it for this summer, and it's going to upset some people, but we can have the discussion, and hey, we can ask the city staff to okay enforce it, and we can either keep it or undo what he's talking about, the exception permit, right? Okay. I'd like to move that we approve up to $25,000 in fund from the harbor budget for the purchase of four sets of decorative banners for the Embarcadero streetlight poles and brackets and installation.
Yeah, I'll second.
Discussion?
Go ahead.
Just to bat it around when you guys get to this, with the design, if there's room to have one or two banners that actually direct people to the visitor center, an idea to introduce as you go get those processed, if you think there's a way to do that cleanly and clearly, that would be an interesting component.
My immediate kind of feedback on that is I don't know that it would get noticed. I mean, if it's for a directional sign like visitor center here, it's more of a street kind of visual thing, but I'm not against it, and I will certain Friday morning is Embarcadero meeting, 9 o'clock. I'll bring it up as an idea. Anything else over here? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Council, for this. We are now at the consent calendar. I have not missed anything, staff. I'm going to pull item A5 for a date change only. Anybody want to pull anything else over here? No? Anything here? Can I please hear?
Move approval of consent calendar less A5.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And the resolution on A5 25-11 down in the second whereas from the bottom says set the public hearing date for April 26. April 26 meeting is jammed up, and I'd like to change that to May 10th. So I would ask.
What number did you say?
A5 is all I'm. Yeah, all I'm doing is asking for a date change that I've run this by staff. And so I would ask for approval of A5 changing the public hearing date to May 10th.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Declaration of future agenda items. I will make the A-frame sign declaration, and let's see if we can't squeeze that in the next two so we can address it for summer. Where we April, May, let's see if we can
addressing the changes to those that meet every other month also.
Yes.
Okay.
So are you cool on that?
Yeah,
one then?
That's fine.
So that's not a declaration then. We'll just go with that. Nancy, do you have anything? George, do you have anything? Noah?
Salmon disaster, do you want to follow up on that?
How?
I think Harbor is already, and Chambers already put that information out there for the SBA information.
Yeah, SBA thing's happening.
Yeah.
In Caps, Boxers, and Feinstein's office, that subject was brought up. I remember particularly one of the offices was like, salmon disaster assistant. It was like, we know all about the, oh, it's Caps. So our Washington representatives are aware. I don't know what else, and I talked to Brian before the meeting tonight. I don't know what else we can do at this point. But, I mean, I'm there to write a letter, make a call, make a trip, attend a meeting, whatever it takes on behalf of the salmon fishermen. And I know that the Harbor Department's, watching this closely as well. All our friends are salmon fishermen. Yes, Nancy?
If it's all right with you.
You already said nothing.
I know, but I was going to follow up on Mr. Smuckler's question. I have appointments with our representatives next week, and Sue in Washington, and Sue Eichenbaum has given me information, so I'll just follow up and make sure it's A-okay, if that's all right with you.
Well, that's fine.
If you let me go home.
As long as you're going there, I might have a couple of things for you to talk about back there, too.
Well, hurry up then.
Okay.
I'm leaving.
Okay. Anything else from council? Anything from staff? Thank you all, especially our two audience members, for staying until the very end. And thank you, staff, for a late meeting, and we're adjourned.